Tealicious Candies help to support our local food pantry, the community giving back food pantry located at 2358 South Main Street in Salt Lake City. Every time you buy Tealicious Candies, you help keep the doors of this vital community service open. Tealicious Candies are beautifully packaged and the price is right. They are perfect for any occasion, whatever it may be, and just right to snack on after lunch or dinner. Tealicious Candies uses only the freshest ingredients and comes in many wonderful flavors. Martha Ann's Classic Peanut Brittle, Pecan Brittle, Smooth Almond Brittle, Cashew Brittle, Cocoa Coconut with no nuts, and New Sun Brittle. Every purchase helps to continue to keep serving the community, and one person can make a difference, and that person is you. For more information or to place your order, call 801-657-3422. Again, to order your delicious Tealicious Candies and make a difference, call 801-657-3422. Thank you for your support, and may God bless you.
AM 630 K-Talk, the voice of Utah, proudly presents Drive Time Live. Real people, real talk. Now the Dean of Talk Radio, Mills Crenshaw.
Welcome. You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show. And I have two in-studio guests. They are Neil Rapley and Stephen Smoot, both from FAIR. Gentlemen, welcome to K-Talk.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate your being here. Now, first and foremost, so that the audience will know and understand, what the heck is FAIR?
Well, that's a good question. And the first thing you may need to know, or your audience may need to know, is we've rebranded ourselves recently. So you may have known us as FAIR, the Foundation for Apologetic Information and Research, but now we go by FAIR Mormon, just sort of a cosmetic, you know, name rebranding, I suppose you could say. But it's the same organization that your viewers may have heard of or your listeners may have heard of. And what we essentially are is a group of LDS members who are dedicated to defending the LDS Church from criticism and from attacks. And we have resources that we've put together on a website. We're all online, you know, responding to all sorts of attacks and criticisms of the church that you may hear today.
What? People attack the church? I've never heard of such. I get that constantly on the air, as you can imagine. And, I won't characterize them. Anyway, it's a pleasure to have you here. Give us a little more background on FAIR, if you would.
Well, it actually started by just disparate members of the church who were independently trying to defend the church online themselves, and they realized that they were getting the same questions over and over and over again, and they had to keep writing out the same explanation over and over and over again. So rather than do that, they came together and created this organization, a largely online-based group where they would be able to create a website and house and a repository of answers to commonly asked questions. And that has grown since then. That was 1997, I believe, is when they got started. And that has grown since then to a very large answer database that we have on our website now. That addresses nearly every criticism imaginable against the church.
There is so much misinformation out there. It's incredible. And this goes clear back to the foundation of the mm-hmm. church. Same idiocies keep coming up. There is a convention in town, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually coming up this week, and it's going to be in Provo. It's on the 7th and 8th of August, so this Thursday and Friday. And this is actually an annual conference that we've had, I believe, since FAIR has, you know, existed, right?
Since
we started. Since 99, okay. And what it is sort of taking, you could say, the best and brightest of LDS apologists and scholars out there who are willing to defend the church and willing to correct this misinformation, This is going to be a two-day conference addressing all sorts of different topics, from the Book of Mormon to the Book of Abraham to church history to current like social issues like same-sex marriage and women's roles in the church, which is obviously a very hot topic button right now. So you're going to have a wide spectrum of topics being discussed at this conference, and it's really a great place to come to see sort of the front lines, you might say, of what's being discussed and debated about the church these days and sort of the cutting-edge research that's, you know, going out there in response to it.
And you two gentlemen have been at this how long?
I joined FAIR in 2011, and I had started kind of on my own with a blog and things like that shortly before then, 2010, I think. Just shortly after I got back from my mission, I started getting into this kind of stuff because I would get questions like this on my mission from tracting and from less active members who had lost their faith over anti-Mormon literature and things like that. And so I guess that's 4 or 5 years now is how long I've been at it, personally.
Yeah, my situation is similar to Neil's. I found out about FAIR Mormon in high school. Just I was naturally curious and interested about some of these topics. And going on the internet, I inevitably landed with FAIR. I joined FAIR, I believe, 2008 or 2009, so a year or two before Neil did. And like him, it started out with just this sort of independent interest of mine, but I soon discovered that FAIR Mormon has some great resources and a great community of like-minded individuals who want to defend the church and speak out in favor of the church. And that's sort of how I started out with it.
Well, congratulations to both of you. Forgive me, I have this mental picture. See, I started in 1965.
Yeah.
How old were you then?
How old was I? I would have been like 18, I think, when I got involved with FAIR Mormon. I'm 24 now, and so that was, what, 6 years ago or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And had my two-year mission, of course, where I sort of took a break. But as soon as I got back, I was right back with FAIR Mormon working again with them.
So neither of you would have been around at all.
No, not in 1965.
Yeah.
That's the reason I asked, because Martin Tanner, who's a good friend of mine, you are familiar with Martin. We've been at this for many, many years, and it's exciting to me to see new blood involved in this effort. And the only quarrel I ever have had is the idea of apologetics, and I realize that is a whole field of endeavor, but the idea that the gospel has to be apologized for troubles me.
Well, that's something we actually get a lot, and that's actually part of the reason we changed the name from the acronym to just FAIR Mormon, because we were getting that kind of question a lot, and it comes from a misunderstanding of the origins of the word apologetics. It actually goes back to Latin and ultimately Greek roots, and the essence of the meaning is to defend. And in fact, it's in the New Testament, and it's often translated as to reason or to defend. And that's all. We're not apologizing that the gospel's out there. In fact, we're proud of the gospel, and we believe it's important, and so we're defending it and trying to show people that it can stand up to scrutiny.
Before I open the phone lines, which I will do in just a few minutes, what are some of the very typical things that you come across?
Well, it's interesting. We usually get a wide spectrum of people, either with genuine questions about the church that they may have heard, or criticisms that they have of Mormonism that they want to sort of level at us. We have, for example, Christians of other denominations that will criticize Mormon theology or Mormon doctrine, saying that we're not Christians or that the Bible is sufficient and we don't need the Book of Mormon. Or we will have atheist or agnostic individuals who, you know, doubt or question the very existence of God, and they want to attack the church along those lines. So, you know, it can run anywhere from attacking the Book of Mormon, claiming it's not authentic scripture, to attacking the very idea or belief in God. It really depends on the individuals that we get writing into FAIR or that we correspond with who, you know, have questions for FAIR Mormon.
Okay. Good answer, and I appreciate that. We've already started to get phone calls.
Oh, perfect.
So let me give the phone number, 801-254-5855. So if you have questions about the LDS Church, about fair, about what these two young men are doing, now's the time to call. 801-254-5855. Let's go right to Boris. Boris, welcome. You're on K-Talk. Hello?
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. You know, hey, you do kind of grow on people like a fungus. I gotta be honest.
That's called damning with faint praise.
Yeah. How are you two guests today?
Well, I'm doing fine. Yeah.
That's good to hear. Okay. Well, hey, my question to Mills is this. Hey, Mills, I wanted to ask you, can you think of anything the state of Utah has ever paid for by itself without the United States of America paying part of the bill or the entire bill?
Oh, yeah, the creation of the state, the building of the streets, the basic infrastructure of the state, all of this was laid down long before the federal government ever got involved in any of its
road, right?
Goody programs.
It was a dirt road, right?
Yeah, and the first paved roads were also paid by Utah taxpayers.
Okay, and guess who pays to maintain them now, right?
We do.
Good old Uncle Sam.
No, actually, Uncle Sam doesn't. The
you
only
pay a portion of it. You pay a portion of it. But, you know, the thing is let's be honest here. You need to stop all this rhetoric about, oh, my God, the deficit this, the deficit that, all these people on welfare. The state of Utah is on welfare. Utah is a poor state this place would be a hole in the ground if it was not for America. We recently built your police station, your fire station. We built your St. George Airport. We're going to probably pay to do your airport.
What part of the federal government are you involved? You keep saying we. What part of the federal government are you?
We means America, the American taxpayer.
Oh, but
hey, we means
no,
America.
No, no. Whoa, oh, Pete, we. Pete, you've rid this hobby horse into the ground and.
Yeah,
what?
And I'm going to keep on riding it.
Okay,
as long
but
as
then
you keep on talking.
You force me to pot you down simply because we can't hold a conversation this way. But I'm going to make one point, and then I'll just sit back and let these two gentlemen comment. What you forget, Pete, is that the federal government owns the vast majority of the land in the state of Utah. And if it would do as it has done with the vast majority of states in the eastern portion of the United States, if it would give to our state the land that really belongs to our state within the state boundaries, we wouldn't need a dollar of federal money because the coal, the oil, natural gas, all of the other wealth of the state would be used. Gentlemen, any comments you have?
Well, not necessarily. I'm not entirely sure how the subject has much to do with apologetics per se. I don't know. We're just here to talk about Fair Mormon in the conference, and of course, you know, Fair Mormon is politically neutral, so we don't like to get into these sorts of discussions. And
so, hey, can I ask you a question? I really do have a thing about, like, the Sunstone Symposium and organizations like yours. Usually the Mormon Church doesn't allow anyone to comment on anything about their religion without their endorsement. So, I don't understand when Sunstone says they're independent or when you say you're independent or neutral. It's very hard for me to believe that the Mormon Church allows you to go out there and talk doctrine and all this other stuff without their approval.
I've never heard of the church trying to stop anyone from talking about the church and the doctrine. I mean, we've all got, you know, our freedom of speech, and, you know, we are completely independent of the church. Sunstone is definitely independent of the church. There's lots of venues, actually, that are independent of the church that are commenting on history and doctrine and scripture related to the church. You know, I could tell you about several of them. There's Sunstone, as you've already mentioned. There's us. There's Interpreter, which is another online venue. There's dialogue, which is clearly independent of the church. And there's several more. I mean, I could go on, but I'm just going to be honest.
I think what the caller is confusing is that no one can give pronouncements as far as the doctrine of the church except the brethren.
Yeah, sure. We don't go around acting like we're declaring the official doctrine. We're just we're commenting on it and we're defending it.
Yeah, and perhaps your caller is also somewhat confused when I mentioned us being neutral. I meant in the sense that politically neutral. Fair Mormon does not take any political stance. Obviously, we're not a political organization. So there are members of Fair Mormon that come from all different political persuasions. So that's why I was sort of confused with your initial comments about the federal government and such, is because we just don't discuss that at Fair Mormon. That's, you know, an entirely different subject. But Neil's right when he says, I haven't heard anything from the church saying we're not allowed to speak our minds or have these sorts of discussions or conversations. We just always, of course, preface our comments by saying we don't speak officially for the church. Obviously, we speak for ourselves.
Ray, welcome.
Hi. I was just commenting on your Christian Mormon brothers. And I'm not a Mormon, but I think right now we're being attacked as spiritual people, whether we're Catholic or Jewish or LDS or Baptist or whatever religion. So I think we all have to come together and ask God every day to help build our faith. And it's not up to Christians that don't belong to the Mormon Church to convert. And whenever I get a missionary over here, I say, what can I do for you? I'm not Mormon, but I do believe that Christ is my Savior. And basically, that's where I go. It has nothing to do with people that already love the Lord Jesus Christ as their Savior to try to convert them to, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's great. I remember on my mission, lots of people just like you who would invite us into their home and discuss with us and offer us that hospitality, and they weren't interested in the message we had to share. And that's fine, but we do believe we have some added truth, and we like to share it whenever we can.
One thing also mentioned.
You know, one of the greatest witnesses that you can add is that your way of life, into not what you say in words, it's what you do. I had a LDS, he was one of my bosses, and he says, don't tell me your religion, show me your religion.
Yeah.
It's how you act, it's how you respond, it's how you conquer your own difficulties. Because right now we're all conquering our difficulties. We're in tribulation times.
Agreed.
We are in the last days.
Yeah, I agree.
If I can briefly plug something for the upcoming conference, since your caller mentioned the idea that we're under attack these days, one of the discussions or one of the topics at the conference this upcoming Friday is from Hannah Smith, and she will be discussing religious liberty, what Latter-day Saints need to know to preserve our first freedom. And that, of course, I believe, could apply to other Christians or Jews or other citizens who are concerned about preserving religious freedom. So certainly that's a topic of discussion these days, and it's one that Fair Mormon is going to be discussing at the upcoming conference with Hannah Smith's presentation. So if your caller is interested in, the subject, maybe that may be something he want to check out further to get an LDS perspective on this and how it might apply for others.
Well, you're a very kind soul, and I really appreciate that you come on Mill's show.
So, Ray, and we appreciate your call very much.
Well, have a nice day.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Elaine, it's an honor to have you on.
Hi. You know what? This religion, topic that we're talking about, I believe, anyway, I don't care what your religion is. We're all trying to get to the same place. So here's where my little thing is, you go along to get along. And we are all connected in some way. That's what I believe. I don't care if you're Mormon, if you're Catholic, you're Jewish, or what. And you know what? In today's world, look at what we're looking at. We're all being attacked. If you believe in Jesus Christ, we're being attacked.
Yeah, I think absolutely one of the important aspects of Mormon teaching, as I understand it, is to stress the commonality we have as brothers and sisters of our Heavenly Father. And whatever religious differences we might have, we don't need to, you know, ignore these differences we might have, but we can still work with each other despite these differences,
right.
And we can still love each other.
At the end of the day, which this is the silliest thing to me about the whole thing, we're all driving to get to the same place.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, no question.
The point that I'm trying to make today, though, whether you're LDS, whether you're Catholic, whether you're Protestant, look around you. We're being attacked because of what we believe.
Well, and our brothers and sisters who are Christians in the Middle East are
right.
being murdered because they believe in Christ.
In fact, I have a sister that was Catholic, that she's a nun, and she had to come back. All the nuns had to leave in the area that she was in because they're killing Christians. So, you know, and I mean, and I feel that way about no matter what religion you are, if you're in a place where you're going to be killed because of your religion, you should leave.
Appreciate your sharing that.
And like I said, hey, I've got a lot of Catholic friends, I've got a lot of Mormon friends, I've got a lot of Protestant friends, and like I said, as far as I'm concerned, we're all connected, we're all brothers and sisters, and we're all trying to do the best that we can, and we're all basically breed the same police at the end of the day.
Thank you very much for sharing, Elaine.
Yeah, and thank you, young men on the Mouse program, too. You keep doing what you're doing. We need it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
My guests are Neil Rapley and Stephen Smoot. Don, welcome.
Two questions for you guys.
Go ahead.
What do you make of the? It's in Spencer W. Kimball's book, Miracle of Forgiveness, where he seems to indicate that the personage that we refer to in popular culture as Bigfoot is actually Cain.
That's an interesting question because my third great grandfather, if I'm remembering correctly, my third great grandfather, Abraham Owen Smoot, is one of the original individuals who sort of started this understanding. He recalls a conversation he had with David W. Patton back in Missouri, where David W. Patton says, I encountered this fellow. He was this giant, tall, hairy guy, if I'm remembering correctly, and he said he was Cain. And my understanding is this is where President Kimball got this from. You know, in my own opinion, I think you kind of have to be careful with these kinds of accounts because they're usually late and third or second hand, and you just have to be careful, you know, with fully accepting them because they may not be the most reliable source of information. I know it's been a popular belief in the church, at least culturally. You know, I've had friends of mine that have said this, but, you know, whether that's true, it's anybody's guess. I personally don't put a whole lot of stock in it myself, but I suppose other people may have differences of opinion on that.
Let me make this one comment. I had a listener that I met with just a week or so ago, and I talked to him in person. And within the last month or month and a half, he had a direct encounter with Bigfoot locally in the Uintas. And there, as I listened to the discussion he had, it was matter of fact. He didn't try and dramatize it or anything of that nature. I have no question in my mind that he was telling the truth. So there is something or someone out there, and I don't have a clue who it is. But I when I heard this account from him in the first person, I believed him.
Whatever happened to farms?
Well, there has been some recent events with that, or the last couple years anyway. Farms ultimately got incorporated into BYU and changed their name to the Neil A. Maxwell Institute for Religious Scholarship. About a year or so ago, 2 years ago now, I think, actually, they opted to move in a different direction, and they haven't published as much material on apologetic-related topics. That's not to say they aren't still producing some great scholarship there, but they took a new direction. And one of the outcomes of that actually was the start of a new organization called the Interpreter Foundation. And you can look them up online, mormoninterpreter.com. And that's ran by several people who used to be involved with the old farms, and they've published lots of really great material.
I'll just say this. I'm an active, you know, faithful LDS. The one problem I have with apologetics is just like the answer you gave about the Bigfoot Kane story, and that is if you can't defend it or if it's uncomfortable, you explain it away as if it's not there.
Well, I don't know if I would quite characterize it as that's what I'm trying to do. I think what I'm trying to do is think critically about these accounts we have. I mean, for all I know, you know, it could be very well what happened. You know, I'm not necessarily saying it's automatically false. What I'm saying is if you look at these sources critically and you try to analyze them using critical thinking skills, it becomes a little less certain, in my opinion. And I'm just urging caution with these sorts of sources or accounts that we sometimes encounter. Instead of just sort of automatically assuming that they're true because it came from a prophet or because it came from a general authority or something, maybe we should be a little more cautious in what we accept, and study it a little bit more before we fully accept it. That's all I'm trying to really get at. And I think it's good because there's a lot of we call them faith-promoting rumors out there that you'll hear in church culture. And a lot of these faith-promoting rumors are based on factual events and have some, you know, factual foundation to them, but a lot of them are sort of just made up. And if you put your faith in these faith-promoting rumors, some of which are problematic or some of which are rather dubious, that can lead to further problems when you find out, well, for example, you find out one of the stories is false or at least, you know, not fully truth. And then you say to yourself, well, what else am I being told in the church that's not true or that's also false? And so it raises doubts and questions if you put your basis of your testimony on these kinds of accounts. So that's all I'm trying to do is to urge caution in what we accept and in what we take as sort of as truthful and factual and use some critical thinking skills to evaluate them.
And if I could just add to that for a second, I think one of the biggest things, at least for me and in my own approach, is I don't like to get too caught up on things that really aren't that important. I don't think, you know, our salvation is ever going to hang on whether we believe that Cain is walking around as Bigfoot or not. And so I don't see value in taking a hard stance on that and not allowing some people flexibility there if they're struggling with maybe that idea. Whereas, you know, with core doctrines, say the historicity of the Book of Mormon or something, I think we do need to be a little more firmer and defend it a little more fiercely than that, because that is something that's important and that's something that a lot of faith can ride on.
Appreciate your call. 801-254-5855. As you talked about that, a couple of things hit my memory, and I'd like to get your response to it. First and foremost, as to that particular story, if you've ever played the game telephone, you understand that when you get a second-hand story or a third-hand story, sometimes they're not very accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing has to do with a very popular myth, and I'll bring that up in a minute. But first, let's take the call. Caller, your first name, please.
Hi, Mills. This is Bonnie.
Yes, Bonnie.
Did that man that you talked to that seen Bigfoot, did he have a conversation with him?
No, he did not.
Okay.
He saw him, maybe 35, 40 yards from him.
Oh, okay.
And this personage or being was not afraid of him at all. He described him as being extremely muscular, huge, and very powerfully built. And it was obvious that he had been watching him for some time, and just at a normal walking pace, he was moving so fast that this gentleman that I spoke with, who was on a motorcycle, had a hard time catching up to him. I almost call it an animal, but I don't think that's necessarily so. But that this being was walking and almost keeping pace with him on a motorcycle.
Wow. Okay, thanks, Mills.
Thank you. 801-254-5855. Let me come back to this myth. I get in trouble every year because I love Christmas. It is it's a very important thing to me, even though I know that the actual birth of the Savior was in the springtime. But I think it's very appropriate that we join the world in celebrating the birth of Christ in the wintertime, even though we know that's incorrect as far as the time is concerned. But I have grown to despise the little red elf. And the reason I do is so many parents say to their children, or they treat this as though it is real, as though it is a fact. And then when the facts dawn, I believe that the emphasis on this little red elf destroys faith in a parent's veracity. And why? Well, if that's a game that adults play, is that true about Jesus? Is that true about Heavenly Father? And how do you separate those two? Caller, your first name, please.
Yeah, this is Carl.
Hello, Carl.
Well,
I sort of suspected we might get a call from you.
Sorry, I tuned in late, but when I hear these two gentlemen, I think of the statement made by Brigham Young in the Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 77, that Mormonism has the greatest and smoothest liars in the world. I think his statement has been proven correct time after time.
Well, as a former member of the church, you certainly would fit that bill, Carl.
Well, I'm talking about you and the Mormon apologists. Whenever they talk about Book of Mormon evidence in the Americas, nothing but lies from these people. When they talk about biblical evidence, nothing but lies. Same with the Book of Abraham, the Mountain Meadow Massacre, and the trial of Joseph Smith in Bainbridge, 1826. I have yet to hear the truth from believing Mormons. All I ever hear are these stories that other people have passed on to them. You apologists never look at the original documents to see whether they're true or not. You never check with the real archaeologists who are doing the digging there in Central America. You listen to these people who they find a little piece of whatever, and they say, this proves the Book of Mormon. Well, there is no evidence for the Book of Mormon, just the same as there is no evidence for Moses and the parting of the Red Sea, the stopping of the sun by Joshua. All these are just a bunch of fairy tales meant to take money out of your pocket. The Mormon Church is a business that pretends to be a religion in order to avoid paying taxes, and they're taking 10% of you believers, and I feel sorry for you who fall for this con game.
Other than that,
tell us what you really think about Mormonism, Carl, because I'm not quite sure from your comments there.
Well, I used to be a believing Mormon, but when I was 16, I began to have doubts about the validity of the Book of Mormon when I began to read archaeology and all the findings. All that has been pretty much confirmed. All the Indians in America can trace their DNA back to Eastern Asia, not to Israel.
All of the Indians is what you're saying.
That
is that correct?
That is right. Have you ever found, except for those Indians in the past who have been, who have had relations with white people that came from the old world.
Hold on, please.
But the fact is that that is pretty new DNA. All the markers of the DNA go back to Eastern Asia. And so with their language and their writing. The writing was only developed in Central America, nowhere else in the Americas. And that type of writing has no relationship whatsoever Hebrew, Egyptian, or any other old world.
I think we'd let you go on ad nauseum. Now let's get a response.
Go on forever,
yeah. Let's get a response, please.
I'll let Neil start. I'll let him say anything that he may want
You know, the question is where to start. There's, you know, you've covered a lot of ground here. I can start by honestly saying, actually, yes, we do look at the original documents. I've spent plenty of time digging around in primary source documents on the early church history, and even on in biblical archaeological contexts and things like that. So what you're saying, I'm not even one of the leading scholars, and I can tell you that it's blatantly false that we don't ever look at the original source material, because we do.
I have a question for Carl along those lines. Carl, are you aware or familiar with the Joseph Smith Papers Project?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay, so for the past, they started in the early 90s is when they hatched the idea, and they started working on it in the early 2000s, and they released the first volume in 2008, I think. What the church has been doing has been gathering and collecting and publishing all of Joseph Smith's known primary historical documents, journals, letters, meetings of minutes, and so forth. And as a matter of fact, I happen to be working with the Joseph Smith Papers right now as an intern working on the series. And so I can assure you, Carl, that Mormon scholars are in fact looking at the primary source documents on these, you know, questions,
okay,
and coming up with these historical analyses.
So what did the Joseph Smith writings prove to you?
Well, for one thing, it shows what a remarkable man Joseph Smith was, and it
shows to me
that the cynical interpretation that people have of Joseph Smith, that he was this conniving, sniveling con man who was all in it for the money and the sex and the power, that's just absolutely bogus and does not bear out in his original papers. And mind you, Carl, these are papers that Joseph Smith was writing without the intention of having them published one day. These were personal letters and personal journals of his. He wasn't, you know...
Which is usually where we find people lying.
Right. We usually find people lying in their confidential, you know, papers. And here we have Joseph Smith, at least as I've read them and worked on this, it is the exact opposite of that. He comes across as very genuine, sincere, magnanimous, charismatic, a wonderful human being. Of course, he had his flaws and he had his problems, and we discussed that in the church. But this cynical interpretation that I hear about Joseph Smith is just not borne out in his papers. So that's an example that I would give to you to reconsider when you say, oh, well, we Mormons don't look at the original historical, you know, documents. That is absolutely false. And if you don't believe me, you can go to a local Deseret Book and you can pick up the Joseph Smith papers there and see for yourself what the church has been doing with this.
Yeah, or there a lot of them are available online.
Anything, but his actions speak louder than his words. His money digging in the 1820s say a lot more about his state of mind than whatever he writes down.
Well, what do you think, Carl, do you think that says about his state of mind? Because that's quite remarkable that you have the clairvoyance to read his mind, and a guy that's been dead for over 150 years. You know what he was thinking when he did that. So please, you know, expound on that.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, this man had a criminal mind with deceiving people in order to get their money. The money digging scheme proves that. The Kirtland anti-bank society proves that he tried to get rich. He borrowed $100,000 from people, which he never repaid. Man is a thief.
The money was all lost. He lost money in that endeavor as well. If that was a money-making scheme, it was a really bad one.
That's right. He was a poor money manager, and he lost the money he stole.
But he was
people.
A great prophet.
But tithing is one method to get money out of people, and his United Order was to get even more money and property out of people into his own pocket.
You think even though in the United Order the money and land went back to the person that was deeding it to the church? So in other words, you give your money to the church, and they give back to you what you need for your needs, and yet that somehow proves that Joseph Smith was all in it for the money?
He was in for it, for the money, and his actions throughout his life prove it. His dictatorship over Nauvoo.
So tell me, Carl, if you're so certain of this, how many of the primary source documents have you looked at? Because I'm really not impressed that you didn't even know about the Joseph Smith Papers Project, but you're so certain you know everything about Joseph Smith's life.
So, I wasn't sure if you were talking about the diary of Joseph Smith.
There's more than just one diary, Carl.
Yeah.
There's
a
lot of primary sources from Joseph Smith.
Joseph Smith was the biggest liar, and I wouldn't believe a word
of
it.
Oh, no, Carl, you have that title. Hands down, you have that title.
And as Brigham Young, too.
No.
Yes.
They're not even. No one on the planet comes close to you, Carl.
His cover-up of the Mountain Meadow Massacre proves Brigham
Young. Yeah, we've gone down this path in the past, Carl. You're a one Johnny One Note. Hi, caller. Your first name, please.
Chris.
I'm sorry?
Chris.
Chris, welcome. Thank you.
Hey, I want to commend your guest. I thought they handled Carl dexterously, as well as you, especially about that, about being one of the slickest liars. I commend you for that. But, yeah, you know, Carl is the reason that I believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ. I was an atheist before I started listening to K-Talk. I determined that if there's somebody that's so adamant against the church, there must be something to it, so I started investigating. Thank you, Carl, for my testimony.
I'm sure he's tearing his hair out.
Poor guy. But, yeah, and why does he listen to these programs anyway, Mills? That's my question. If he doesn't believe in him.
So he can call in and bash people.
I know. He seems to get a lot of pleasure in doing so. But you know what? The gospel, there has to be some degree of plausible deniability to any truth that Heavenly Father wants us to exercise faith to discover. Otherwise, you know, if everything that Joseph Smith touched turned to gold, then people would have joined the church in droves, you know, just to get the temporal benefits therefrom. But there has to be that element of doubt so that we need to exercise and develop that faith. And I have no problem with that.
Chris, I'm glad you said that. I'm going to add my 2 cents worth about one thing that Carl said, because I think this is very, very important. And this is just personal. I can't speak for anyone else. But he talked about tithing being this big scam to get money from people. And I personally can tell you it's the exact opposite. The Lord said, prove me herewith. Now, this is, there aren't a lot of things where this is so, but the Lord said specifically about this principle of tithing, prove me herewith and see if I will open the windows of heaven and pour forth a blessing so great you can't contain it. And yep. I have put this to the test, and I will say this. I would not dare not pay tithing, because I have gained an understanding that this is a true principle, that it is a covenant with the Lord, and the Lord has said, when you do what I say, I am bound. That's the most powerful contract I have ever heard. But he also added to that, when you do not what I say, you have no promise. And to me, the principle of tithing is so powerful and so true that quite literally, if I make a dollar today, when I go home, I put a dime in a tithing envelope to be paid that week.
Yeah.
That's how strongly I have put that principle to the test.
Yeah.
Carl, you, sir, respectfully, are a liar.
Yeah, and, you know, on that same topic, if we're going to talk about tithing for a second, you know, I've had some really profound experiences with tithing myself. My wife and I, when we were, you know, a few years back, we didn't have very much income for a while. My wife was just working part-time. I didn't have a job. I was going to school. And, you know, we honestly didn't know where money was going to come from a lot of the times. And we kept paying our tithing. And I can't tell you how many times we just opened our door and there were groceries on the porch, or there was money taped to our door. And things like that happened that told me that somebody was looking out for us, for paying our tithing and for, you know, keeping other commandments that the Lord had given us.
Yeah,
Chris,
good on you guys.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate your call.
I just want to commend these two young men. I've got a daughter on a mission now, and I'm trying to figure out a way. She's only been out for 5.5 months, but she's having so much fun. I'm trying to figure out a way to extend that throughout her life. she's finding so much meaning in it. Anyway, I commend you guys for extending your missions.
Well, thank you very much.
Good work.
Thank you.
Yep, we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. Robert, welcome, sir.
Yeah, well, of course, Carl made me call again. you know, you keep forgetting, you know, I know I told you this before, that next time Carl calls, this is the one subject he calls every time on, you know, you got to start it right out with asking if he's got his temple recommend yet, and if he's dying to go on his mission, where his mission's at. You know, since Carl's such a lunatic for the church, one of these days he's going to get flipped, and he's going to be the craziest member there is. But also, I guess you got to go over the same back and forth you do with him every time. Start asking Carl what he does believe in. If he believes in the Ice Age or the Big Bang or any of this other stuff that he hasn't seen, because, I mean, obviously, Carl's not going to believe anything until he sees it. You know, God's got to come down here and part an ocean for him and raise a bunch of dead. And after he sees it, he'll believe. So I ask Carl, well, what do you believe in? Guarantees he's going to have a whole slew of stuff he didn't see. So how is it he believes this stuff he didn't see, but not that?
What Carl doesn't understand and won't for probably the rest of his life is how much he reveals about himself every time he calls. He's laying himself bare.
Yeah, well, he's digging a grave in hell, you know. Just because, you know, sooner or later we all have to answer for even what we say. And I don't know what his desperate need is that everybody else follows him into hell, because he just has this personal, I don't even know what you call it, incredibly drastic need for everybody to turn on God and Christ. Like he's going to get something out of it. I don't know, maybe he's retired and he has nothing to do and this is the only thing he thinks he can do. But, you know, since he calls in as much as he does and says, you know, all that he does, like he just did.
Look, I don't want to pick on Carl. Like, you know, he has his own row of weeds to hoe, and we'll just leave him to his own devices.
Okay, well, I have a question for your guest there. this is a big one. This is something I heard about just a little while ago, and it's knocked me, I don't know what you call it, on my butt. But apparently, Joseph Smith married some other guy's wives while the guy was still alive.
Yeah, right? So what you're referring to there is what's called polyandry, which it means to have multiple husbands. And we know that, I believe the number is 13. He was sealed to 13 women who were legally married to other men at the time. And the criticism that's often brought up against Joseph Smith is to say, well, the only reason why he was being sealed to them, of course, was so he could have sex with them, because he was, again, this is the cynical interpretation, he was this sex-crazed power maniac who just wanted to control women, and he was so depraved that he wouldn't even stop with other men's wives. And this is the typical narrative you hear from a lot of individuals, especially people on the internet. However, I would strongly recommend that you look at the research of a gentleman by the name of Brian Hales. He has a website called josephsmithspolygamy.com.
Or .org,
I think it is. If you Google Brian C. Hales, Joseph Smith's polygamy, I'm sure you could find it pronto. But he has spent the last, at least the last decade, perhaps even 15 years or so, researching Joseph Smith's practice of plural marriage and looking at, going back to Carl's accusation, looking at every known historical source that we have on Joseph Smith's practice of plural marriage. And what Brian Hales has discovered is that there's really no solid evidence that Joseph Smith engaged in sexual activities with these, quote, polyandrous wives that he had. That these were, and Brian Hales calls it ceremonial polyandry. That's kind of a fancy word he made up. But the idea was Joseph Smith being sealed to these women in a religious practice or a religious ordinance, there's no real evidence that that was followed up with sexuality. And so the accusations of Joseph Smith committing adultery with other men's wives, as we often hear, really doesn't have a lot of, you know, weight to it, thanks to Brian Hales and his really groundbreaking research. So it's a very complex subject, certainly, and it's a very sensitive subject, but I would strongly urge you to look at the research of Brian Hales on this, because I believe he's made a very strong case for you know, dispelling this narrative that we have of Joseph Smith, that we hear from Joseph Smith's critics.
And there were a lot of women.
I mean, it's not so important to me that I got to go track down everything because I'm going to live or die over it.
That's the good thing is that Brian Hales has done all that for you, really. I mean, really? Both Neil and I have met Brian Hales and have worked with him and interacted with him. And, I mean, I'm serious when I tell you he spent a decade going through and finding everything he could on this to get a really the clearest picture we can. So if you go to his website, you know, his three volumes is like 1,000 pages that he has on this. But you don't need to do that. You can go to his website. And you can find it there. And it's really, if nothing else, it can set the record straight with what we do and what we don't know about Joseph Smith's practice of plural marriage.
Yeah. And in the early days of the church, Robert, there were a lot of women who thought that their husbands were scoundrels, that they would never, ever be able to take them to the next life, and that's why they wanted to be sealed to one of the leaders of the church. But that doesn't mean that they had intercourse with them.
Well, yeah. The reality is sealing in the early church was really different than it is today. We think of sealing almost exclusively as marriage today, but people were being sealed for a lot of reasons.
As children.
As children to Joseph Smith or to other people, as siblings, and you know, they believed, and you know, I think it's true that we all need to be sealed together eventually into one big eternal family, and you know, maybe the details were a little fuzzy on how to do that at first, but, you know, we're learning line upon line, and eventually those kind of practices have ceased. But, you know, critics, you know, get a lot of mileage out of turning sealing into marriage, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that this is like one thing that he should have made the main thing that everybody knows exactly about, where he just made a complete record, put this out front, because this thing right here, we'll just tell eons of people, oh, you got to be kidding. There's no way that church is true. You know, their founding guy was marrying another guy's wives. And
yeah, that's why this research that's been done is so important.
Well, it's hidden, though. You got to go digging for it. I mean, Joseph Smith should have said, look, this is going to come up. It's going to be a major, whatever you call it, something against the church, something that people could use against the church. We got to have this up front and clear.
Well, and if I can comment one more thing about that, Brian Hales has also looked at the testimonies of Joseph Smith's plural wives, including some of his polyandrous wives. And one thing that's really striking or remarkable to me is, you know, if at least I'm assuming, or my opinion is that if Joseph Smith was abusing or exploiting these women, as we often hear claimed he was, you would think that they would speak out more about this and leave some kind of record of it, right? That they would, again, if nothing in their private journals or diaries. But what Brian Hales has been able to show is that these women who participated in this practice ended up all having very strong testimonies. Some, you know, for example, Fanny Alger, she, of course, left the church and never returned.
We're going to have to finish this next hour. Thank you. I appreciate your call. We are at the top of the hour. Arkham, Larry, don't go anywhere. We'll pick you up immediately following top of the hour news. We're pleased to have I assume you gentlemen can stay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Okay. We've got Neil Rapley and Stephen Smoot here, both from Fair Mormon Blog, or FAIR. We'll be back right after top of the hour news on Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show. And if you would like to join in, the telephone number, 801-254-5855.
I passed my driving test.
Nice license.
Shows off the facial hair, right?
You had facial hair.
Anyway, Dad, I think it's time I had my own car.
Couldn't agree more.
Really?
Let me just grab the laptop and hit up dexknows.com. Let's see here. Used cars, no credit necessary. Perfect.
Whoa, sweet ride. How did you do that?
With Dex. When you need something here and you need it now, you gotta Dex it. So, let's use Dex to find you...
Hey, I'm Mike. Nice facial hair, kid.
Who's he?
Top-rated mechanic. The way you drive, you'll need one.
Good call.
Hey, Mike, you need any help in the front office?
You need a job?
No, but my son does.
I do.
How else are you gonna pay for all of this?
Oh.
Need something local and need it now? Find it with Dex. In the book at DexKnows.com or on your mobile phone, you'll get the sharpest local info, reviews, and advice fast. Dex. Results for the here and now.
When I say Charles Schulz, you picture the creator of the Peanuts comic strip. For decades, this gentle cartoonist brightened our lives with his wit and wisdom. When Charles retired, Peanuts appeared across the world in more than 2,600 newspapers. But where Charles ended up is less to my point than how he started. His love of comics and drawing began with a Sunday morning ritual of reading the funnies with his dad, two people sharing a paper and some laughs. This is Howard Budd Jr. of Laity Lodge. To do what you love with the people you love is a sure means to nurture future success. What happens at home rarely stays at home in the high calling of our daily work.
Learn more at thehighcalling.org.
You're listening to Utah's first number one talk station. K-Talk, AM 630, KTKK, Sandy, Salt Lake City. The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russert. A suspected Afghan soldier opened fire at a military academy in Kabul, Afghanistan today, killing an American Army general and wounding 15 other U.S. and coalition forces, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
Too soon to tell on what this means for the vetting process. Again, we believe this individual was a member of the Afghan National Security Forces. We need to let the investigation proceed to figure out exactly who this was before we can leap to any conclusions about the vetting process.
Israel has pulled the last of its ground forces out of Gaza as a three-day ceasefire continues to hold. Now it's up to Egyptian mediators to try and bridge the differences between Israeli and Palestinian negotiators in Cairo. The second American Ebola patient to arrive in the U.S. was wheeled into an Atlanta hospital today by workers in biohazard suits. Nancy Reichbold is said to be weak but improving. Stocks lost ground on Wall Street. The Dow fell 139 points. The S&P 500 dropped 18, and the NASDAQ was down 31. This is NBC News Radio. President Obama played trade representative-in-chief at the U.S.-Africa summit in Washington. NBC's Bob Constantini says the president announced some major new business deals.
With a 5.5% rate of economic growth predicted for Africa this year, U.S. companies want a piece of the action. And President Obama told the continent's leaders major firms are putting up $14 billion in investments.
We don't simply want minerals from the ground for our growth. We want to build genuine partnerships that create jobs and opportunity for all our peoples.
Competing with China, especially, Mr. Obama said the companies have nowhere to go but up the export scale.
Of all the goods we export to the world, only about 1% goes to sub-Saharan Africa.
Mr. Obama is also creating a new presidential advisory panel of business leaders to better trade relations. Bob Costantini, NBC News Radio, Washington.
And Scrabble is adding 5,000 words to the new edition of its player dictionary, including selfie, buzzkill, and bromance. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-319-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-319-MYTV.
At just $24.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
Call 877-319-MYTV. That's 877-319-MYTV.
On your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy, it's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now. 800-520-1558. That's 800-520-1558. Don't wait. Call 800-520-1558.
They say every healthy relationship should have a balance of predictability and spontaneity. In fact, it is that assurance of security, that makes the spontaneous possible. Your relationship with your car should be a little like that too. With our new industry-leading unlimited mileage warranty, your certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz instills a sense of confidence. You drive away knowing that you can keep driving for up to 3 years and never have to worry about the miles. Add to that our new complimentary prepaid maintenance on select models, and your certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz becomes the ultimate carefree escape vehicle. Only during the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Sales event, going on now through September 2nd, can you also take advantage of a 2-month payment credit on many models, plus 3 months of Sirius XM satellite radio. So hurry in today. It might just be the most predictable spur-of-the-moment decision you've ever made.
See your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for complete details and limitations on certified pre-owned warranty.
Tune in on Sundays at 4 p.m. to learn the latest cutting-edge science of health with your hosts Hugo Rodier, M.D. and Gary Olson, D.C. on the Integrative Health Show, sponsored by Pioneer Comprehensive Medical Clinic in Draper. Our country is suffering from poor health due to nutritional, environmental, and stress problems. Learn how to address these problems and not rely on symptomatic treatments that often have too many side effects. The Integrative Health Show, Sundays at 4 p.m. on KTalk AM 630.
GEICO has various discounts to help you save even more money on your car insurance. Good driver, multi-car, even a discount for being a good student, which is an incentive for your teenagers to get good grades. And if they get good grades, they might get a good job and possibly become rich. Then they could pay for your car insurance. What a brilliant idea.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
We're mid-sized businesses, the engines of a smarter planet.
Our business depends on the movement of information. Sure, we could use a free file transfer solution like FTP, but if our file transfers, payments, or orders are interrupted, then our business is interrupted.
Which makes that free solution quite costly.
Instead, we rely on Sterling Connect Direct from IBM.
24/7, unattended, uninterrupted, continuous data transfer.
Learn more at ibm.com/engines/connect.
Before Rush, there was Mills. Before Limbaugh, there was Crenshaw. Hard-hitting political talk and human interest discussions since 1965. Now, Drive Time Live with the Dean of Talk Radio, Mills Crenshaw.
Welcome back. It's 6 minutes past four. You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show. The telephone number for future reference is 801-254-5855, and I say for future reference because all lines are currently full. And I thank you all for joining us. My in-studio guests are Neil Rapley and Stephen Smoot. They are both from FAIR. Gentlemen, thank you for staying over with us.
Thank
no
you.
No problem.
Why don't you tell us quickly, before we go back to the phones, tell us a little bit more about the FAIR conference.
Okay. Well, so it's going to be this Thursday and Friday in Provo at the Utah Valley Convention Center, which is just right on Center Street in Provo. And it starts at 8 in the morning, I think. Is that right? 8 in the morning each day and goes till a little after 5. Tickets are available at the door for $64.95 for both days or $39.95 for just one day or the other. You can also get it streamed live to your computer for $25 for both days, and then you'll also have access to that streaming for a few weeks after the fact, so you'll be able to continue to listen. And that you can get on fairmormon.org on our website there. You can get access and purchase the streaming there.
That's it?
That's pretty much the gist of it. Some of the other things I'll just throw out there. There's a bookstore we have, so if you're interested in picking up different books on church doctrine or history or apologetics, you can come to the bookstore and pick that up. We have a number of speakers, obviously. I'll give some of the names real quick, so maybe it'll whet your appetite. Carrie Muhlstein is an Egyptologist at BYU. He'll be talking about the Book of Abraham. Barry Bickmore is another professor at BYU. He'll be comparing Joseph Smith's teachings with early Christian teachings. We have Matt Roper and Paul Fields, two guys, scholars from BYU, who will be discussing attempts to link the Book of Mormon with different 19th century books that were in, you know, the area. Critics will point to these books and say, oh, see, Joseph Smith was plagiarizing from this book. They'll be addressing that criticism. Then there's also, well, speaking of the Joseph Smith papers again, Matt Groh and Matt Godfrey will be talking about the Joseph Smith papers in their presentation. And finally, Dan Peterson, he's a very, very famous or infamous, depending on what your opinion is, but he's a very famous apologist in the church, Dan Peterson, and he'll be talking about the letter to a CES director written by Jeremy Runnels, which is a popular it's a popular tract, I suppose, or letter on the internet these days, and it's Jeremy Runnels, him explaining why he left the church and some of his criticisms of the church, and Dan Peterson will be responding to that. So there's a number of different subjects that I'm sure will have interest to a lot of different kinds of people, and as Neil said, you can sign up for one day or the other or both or do streaming online.
Excellent. Let's go right back to the phones because we've got people who've been waiting quite a while. Arkham, welcome.
How you doing, Mills?
Good, thanks.
A lot of questions have come up in listen to your show, listen to your guests. First, I'd like to say, though, you know, I really respect the LDS faith for sticking with the Old Testament. I guess the two religions that study the Old Testament most are the LDS Church and the Rastafarians. And since they're all, you know, since the LDS Church ain't around smoking pot and doing the Rastafarian thing, I think they probably got a good grip on the Old Testament. But what I'm wondering, Mills, is what made you decide that you had to have a, you know, an LDS apologist show?
Oh, I just have a great producer, Darrell Thorpe. And I give him certain assignments. He comes up with others on his own, and we're looking for shows that we think will be interesting and entertaining for the audience, and there's nothing more or less than that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it does. It makes for some good listening, especially when – I mean, I like opposing views. I like Carl's opinion. I think he's gotten cranky over the last couple of years, but I really do appreciate his opinion. Well, so what I'm wondering is there anything negative written about Joseph Smith that your guests would agree with? And also, he mentioned that they discuss his flaws at church. When I was a member of the LDS faith, I never heard one single flaw of Joseph Smith.
Oh, well, listen, I can start out. We'll see what they have to offer, but...
Okay.
He was severely criticized by some of the worthies of the town at the time, because when he would meet influential people, he would drop down to the ground and want to pull sticks with them. And and when he would face the criticism, his response in good nature was, "Look, I just like to show the boys a good time."
Well, one thing I can mention about Joseph Smith, so. Having researched his life, both on my own and with the Joseph Smith papers, I've read accounts of individuals who knew Joseph Smith, and you, of course, are going to get a wide variety of accounts from people who knew him. And very broadly, people either loved Joseph Smith or hated Joseph Smith. They usually had he was a very polarizing figure. But even the people
the same today, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But even the people that really loved and admired Joseph Smith said things like, you know, Joseph Smith was not a very good judge of character. So he would keep bringing on people as like advisors or counselors that ended up really burning him or stabbing him in the back. And they said things like, you know, he was almost too kind to a fault with some people, where he should have been more stern and should have drawn a line where he was willing to give them more chances to come back, right? So there's an example that comes to mind as I think of some of these flaws that Joseph Smith may have had is he could have probably shown better judgment of some of the people he took on as counselors. Off the top of my head, you have John C. Bennett, William Law. There's some others, you know, that he had that were really close to him that ended up really giving him grief, partly because I think he should have been more aware of who these individuals were.
Okay. Well, can I just ask one real quick thing? I'll just hang up. But is there anything that the Tanners have written that you may agree with?
And I'm sorry, who?
The Tanners.
Oh, the Tanners.
I mean, they have a bunch of documentation, and you know, I mean, is there anything they've written that you might agree with? And I'll hang up.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that that challenge.
Well, you know, I'm remiss to say no without, you know, having all their writings right in front of me. You know, they've covered a wide variety of topics, so it's really hard to say if there's anything somewhere in all of that that I agree with. I can say, you know, every time they're quoting from a primary source document, I agree with that. May not agree the context they put it in, but, you know, I would really have to go through it all. What I can say is that in general, I find their methodology really lacking, and it creates some really problematic interpretations just merely from a historical standpoint, not just from having faith in the church.
Well, I would like to add one thought. I think of the Thon Brody book,
mm-hmm.
No Man Knows My History. When Dr. Nibley was alive, we were friends. Not close friends. I wouldn't make that claim, but we were friends, and I've had him on the air. And I think his response in written form was perfect. No, ma'am, that's not history.
Yeah.
And I think that sums up the Tanner's work. No, that's not history.
Yeah, I think – well, one thing I will say, I like Neil, I disagree with a lot of what the Tanners have written, and I have some major issues with their methodology and their tactics and how they present their historical narrative of Joseph Smith. But to give them some benefit or some, you know, to give credit where credit is due, they were some of the first to really be suspicious of the Hoffman forgeries. And
oh,
I think
yeah,
we owe it. I think we owe it to them to at least they were some of the first to, you know, really start, you know, not, you know, when everybody else was sort of taking them at face value, they were two that were really actually asking tough questions and really skeptical about that. So you have to appreciate them for that at least.
And great point. Also add to that, they were also, you know, willing to stand up to more sensationalistic anti-Mormons like Ed Decker and things like that. And we can certainly appreciate them for being willing to step up there.
Kay, thank you very much for waiting.
Can I ask some questions about the Book of Mormon?
Fire away.
Go ahead.
Okay. Do you know what time of year Lehi left the Arabian Peninsula in the ship?
Do we know what time of year he left?
Uh-huh.
No, and I don't think we do. I can tell you it's one of two times. There's, in order to leave out of that area, there's certain winds that you have to have blowing in certain directions, the monsoon winds that they get.
Okay,
and
right.
They only come at a specific time of year.
Right.
I don't remember off the top of my head what time of year that is.
I do.
Do you? Okay, great.
All the winds are blowing to the west.
Uh-huh.
In the spring, summerish, the winds are blowing to the east.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is my belief, that they left in the fall of the year because they had to gather in their fruits, labors, their produce, their and the beehives had to be full of honey and that kind of thing. That's just a thought I had.
Interesting.
And so,
by the way, archaeologists have found an area that they think may have been the area at which he built the boats.
Right.
There is a little area there called Lehi.
Uh-huh, right.
it was one of the few places where there were groves of trees.
Right. And they had to have the minerals and the stuff to build their utensils to build the ship with.
Correct.
It's on that. It kind of is an L, and it's over on that east side of the L, I think, in that area. Anyway, okay, so where have you studied and believe that Lehi landed and the lands of the Book of Mormon are?
Well, that's something that's obviously fiercely debated in a lot of different venues.
Right. I want to know where you think.
Where there's lots of opinions. If you want my personal opinion, uh-huh. I think they landed somewhere on the got to think about it. Western coast of Guatemala.
Western of Guatemala.
Yeah,
okay.
That's my opinion.
That's your opinion.
That's
okay.
My opinion as well. I agree with Neil on that.
Okay. I just wondered if you had researched any of that or if. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you for the questions.
Interesting topic. Bye.
John, welcome, sir.
Thank you. I would think Joseph Smith is sort of a modern-day Jesus. I mean, not everything he did had complete logic, But he was a visionary, and he did create a great religion from his, you know, his thinking and his teachings. So, you know, it's sort of for the other people to figure out, you know, where he was going with it and what he really did visionarily see. It was obviously something inside him that was driving him that was, you know, led to a good end, I would think.
But, yeah.
Like Jesus, you know, there's the historical Jesus and there's the historical Joseph Smith, and those people are a little bit different than the religion they created, but still, they were both great visionaries, I would think, for the human race.
The one slight twist on what you've commented on, if we're really honest and fair about it, Joseph Smith did not actually create a religion. All he did was restore the religion that was originally on the planet.
Right.
So he never claimed credit for it. And it would be incorrect to give him credit, in my opinion, because he didn't create the gospel as it was laid out. What he did do was restore it in its original form.
That's right. And that was a brave thing to do, actually.
It cost him his life.
Yeah. His final moments were pretty dramatic. He did cry out some kind of chant at the end, trying to preserve his life, but and he took three people out in his death. You know, he shot three people as he was dying. But there was a human side to Joseph Smith, too, I would think. A very honest person. I always compare him to Abraham Lincoln.
Well, forgive me. I've got a break. It's
okay, take care.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jada De Laurentiis. My brother Dino was so, so funny. He was always smiling. When he was diagnosed with melanoma, we were in shock. We didn't know anyone who had skin cancer. He died from a mole the size of a thumbtack. Melanoma can happen to anyone, anyone. Every hour, someone dies from melanoma. It doesn't have to be someone you love. Take action at curemelanoma.org. Go to standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Never play leapfrog with a unicorn. Never run with scissors unless you're a tardy barber. Never wear a fanny pack. No, really, don't ever wear a fanny pack. And never trust a car that hasn't been trusted to Midas. Save on brakes, tires, maintenance, and total car care for a car you can depend on long after the warranty expires. You deserve the Midas touch. Save up to $50 on new brake pads or shoes. Installed, $25 per axle. Excludes warranty redemptions, most vehicles, at participating Midas.
Here's the in-your-face reality. You're listening right now. You're listening because the show is compelling, involved radio that's difficult to tune away from. And if you're listening, so are your potential clients and customers. The only thing missing is your commercial calling our listeners to action. Dynamic, affordable growth for your company is a phone call away. 253-4883. When we answer,
thank you for calling K-Talk Radio.
Say,
hi, I'd like to advertise.
We'll take it from there, and you'll love the results. Call K-Talk Radio right now. 253-4883.
Call now. Call 254-5855. AM 630 K-Talk. Grab your phone and make the call. Drive Time Live with Mills Crenshaw.
Welcome back. Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show on K-Talk. And let's go right back to the phones. Anna, thank you very much for being there. Anna, are you there?
Yes, I am. Getting back to the Book of Mormon and Nephi, I've been over there twice and worked on that site. And it is called Bet Lehi. I was over there with Cleon Skousen, Glenn Kimber, his son-in-law, and Yossi Gannat, who has since passed away. When he read the Book of Mormon, he knew the Book of Mormon was true. He's a Jew. And he came to Utah and talked to the presidency of the church and was counseled to not join the church, to be a good Jewish person, and that the Jews would all come into the church as a race. And I did a lot of that, not a lot, but some of the excavation work with professionals. And it has been turned over now to the people in Israel. It's through a university there, and I can't remember the name, where they're working on it now. But there is a floor there, a tile floor, and it is absolutely beautiful. And they've known about this site. Skousen knew about it about 40 years ago at least. And they have worked on it now. Of course, they're clearing it off. But they knew what they were going to go someplace. They knew they were going to go on a ship. And there's, like, natural caves there, and it has the scratched in the walls, or, of course, the sign of the Christ, which was the fish, the Christians, which was the fish. There's a whole story. I could go on and on, but I won't take up your time. Very interesting.
I appreciate your sharing that. So you would say there is archaeological evidence for the Book of Mormon?
Definitely. Oh, you bet there is. There's a road that was, this was on a, where this floor is, was on a firing range. And that floor has never been hit. There's a tree right beside that floor. And it is, it's, of course, it's burned. But the nomads, I mean, the Bedouins, they knew about this. And this tree, it's more of a bush. And it was a sacred bush. And they put rocks around it, about probably 2.5 feet high, so the goats wouldn't eat that bush. But that has been a sacred area for many, many years, according to the Bedouins there.
Fascinating information. Thank you.
I'd like to talk to you sometime. Maybe I will.
Please do. Please do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Darrell, my producer, welcome, sir.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank Carl for offering Book of Mormon evidence and not realizing he did. I got a tape recording of him talking about Egyptian writing styles, the hieroglyphics, the hierarchic, and the demonic. Now, isn't that evidence for Reformed Egyptian? How the claim has been made that it's been altered and changed and been reformed throughout the years? Thanks, Carl. Appreciate that. I'd also like to thank Carl for talking about evidence for the what Dr. Hugh Nibley talked about, the Jaredites. He suggested that they came from the Asiatic routes to the Americas. So thanks, Carl. Appreciate that. Now I'd just like to point out that, you know, Joseph Smith was a restorer, and so what did he restore? Well, we've, through the Internet and through studies now, a lot of farms and fair members have done this, and myself, we've traced through the centuries what happened to the different doctrines during the Dark Ages on through the centuries. We've literally traced the pre-existence through the centuries. We know that the early church believed in it. You know where they rejected it, like during the Council of Constantinople, 553 AD, they rejected it. And then how it faded off into later legends and traditions and later eras of Christianity. We did the same thing with Christ's ascent to the spirit prison, the priest's gospel there. That some thousands of artworks and writings and traced to the centuries. The temple has been traced to the centuries, too. We know what happened to that. The doctrine of deification. We used to get made fun of, you know, the God makers. Oh, look at those strange Mormons believing they could become gods. Well, we've traced that doctrine through the centuries. We know that early Christianity taught that doctrine. And even the ones that gave us the Nicene Creed, which we're supposed to believe, also taught the doctrine of deification, too. Do the same thing with Christ's worldwide truck. Remember, Mills, how we talked about that Santa Claus is a later legendization of Christ going to other nations. We did shows on that. And so that's some of the points I made. Any comments?
I think it is really compelling how much evidence we can find of similar, very, very similar, eerily similar even, doctrines from early Christian times and what Joseph Smith was teaching in 1830, 1840. In fact, one of the presentations at this year's Fair Conference by Barry Bickmore is going to be all about that kind of thing. He's written a book on the topic, on restoring the ancient church, where he goes through things like deification and the temple and pre-existence, and he shows how several early Christian beliefs are consistent with what Joseph Smith taught on that, and he'll be presenting on that topic at this year's Fair Conference. So if that's something that interests you or any of the other listeners, you know, we'd encourage you to come out and check it out.
Yeah, we had Barry on the show not too long ago.
Great.
And we'd like to see if we get Daniel Peterson, Professor Daniel Peterson, and Stephen Rikstock on, too. Maybe you can put in a good word for us when you're down that way.
We'll see what we can do,
yeah.
Hey, thank you, Darrell.
All right. Talk to you.
Bye-bye. Bob, welcome, sir. Hello, Bob.
Okay, I'm with you.
Good.
I'm enjoying your program. I'm a convert, and I've gone through a lot of other religions. I'd gone to a point where I was starting to look for Eastern religions because I was getting sick and tired of searching, trying to find a church that continually said the same thing. Because I moved around, I would find different pastors taught different things.
Very true.
And so as I went, I lived in Hawaii, and a group of us were sharing our thoughts, and I shared mine in the group, and they said, "Oh, yeah, I've been a Mormon. That's what they believe." And they said, "Oh, they just got a lot of wives. All I knew was polygamy." But the thing I find so interesting, and I'm a digger, and I've had friends who are archaeologists and so on and so forth, and diggers in Egypt and so on and so forth, and I've traveled the world and having the opportunity to talk to people. I just find the negatives go after the things that they feel, like the polygamy and so on and so forth, are the possible things they can go after. The papyrus scroll and so on and so forth. They never go after the fact that a few verses in the Nephi of Isaiah are in the Septuagint, but not in the King James Version. So where did Joseph Smith get that? He couldn't read Greek. And just a number of things like that. How did Joseph Smith know to start the church in the spring when Christ was born, when everybody at the time thought that Christmas was the time that Christ was born?
That is interesting.
You can go on and on and on. But like I say, and listening to the diggers in Egypt and so on, the things that they've found, they can tell very clearly when Christianity got into Egypt, because they buried them facing east, opposed to they were facing before that, burying people facing the Nile.
Interesting point.
But yeah. Nobody talks about Joseph had all this good time. Well, I called up on one of those negative shows, the polygamy show, and snuck it in very carefully. They were talking about all the women that he had been with, and I said, "Well, how many times was his wife pregnant?" I think it was 7 or 8 or 9 times she's pregnant. And she lost a number of, miscarried. But I said, by the way, with all this intimacy that he had with these women, how many babies did they have? How many children does he have? So far, they've never been able to find any DNA.
Yeah.
And, I was just going to say,
Joseph Smith, boy, somebody that wanted to have a good time, why did he go on these 1,000-mile treks and so on with only guys?
That's a good point. I've never heard that one made before.
Here's a question for you. This is something that just popped in my mind the other day, and I've never heard the church talk about it. But tell me about intelligences. Are they all the same or are they different?
That is a question that has been hotly debated for 170 years in the church.
I've never heard it mentioned.
Well, we sort of take it for granted today because, you know, we've tried to systemize or systematize our theology to make intelligences be just one thing. And so the typical scheme or the typical idea you see in the Planet Salvation lessons or discussions today is that, you know, we existed eternally as intelligence, and then we had a spirit birth, and then we had a physical birth. However, Joseph Smith's revelations themselves are kind of ambiguous on what exactly intelligence is. It seems to be this eternal essence, I guess you could say, but precisely what its nature is, we're not sure. At one point, Joseph Smith links intelligence with truth or the mind of man, and so that sort of throws a monkey wrench in it. And guys from Parley P. Pratt to B.H. Roberts to Bruce R. McConkie, all general authorities and apostles and others, they've debated and discussed this, and I'm not sure I have exactly one definitive answer on what intelligence is, besides some kind of, you know, eternal, maybe it's matter or something, you know, maybe like spiritual atoms or something. I really don't know. It's kind of a difficult question, but that's what I sort of lean towards. Yeah,
well, I can add a little bit to this. If matter and energy were the only things that existed in the universe would, because of entropy, have been grinding to a sudden halt, but it's expanding and expanding at an increasing speed. There is something in the universe that violates the laws that govern just matter and energy, and the one thing that fits that bill is intelligence. Intelligence can overcome its own inertia, and it can overcome the inertia in matter and energy. Nothing else in the universe seems to fit that bill. It's just that simple. It is an eternal principle, just like matter and energy. People talk about the Lord creating matter and energy. No. He organized it, and that's what the scriptures actually say.
Yeah.
Well, that's what ex nihilo, you know, the creation out of nothing, the Greeks came out with, but yet if you look at the ancients, they came out and they said, no, he organized.
That's correct.
But no, like I say, it's been very interesting when you get into the in-depth discussions. But the thought that crossed my mind the other day in my studies was, when I'm a grandfather, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, but when you get into looking at newborn babies and so on and working with them as they grow, and then you look at them as perhaps Heavenly Father would look at them. Now, if he takes an intelligence, and from an intelligence is begat a spirit, but we have heavenly parents, whether they're plural or what they are, but anyway, heavenly parents, and we do know that in that group, at least a third of them left with Lucifer, and from the rest of them, some were special and others weren't quite as special because I knew thee before the world was, and we were friends, you know, I picked you, and so on and so forth. So I can see what Heavenly Father is working so diligently to do to take us from spirit intelligences to spirits to where we are today to go on the right track.
To become like he is.
And he knows the right track, the right place. He knows what is best for us because he knows what he's been through.
And the interesting thing about this, in my opinion, Bob, is nothing else fits.
It works the best way I know of.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bonnie, welcome.
Hi, Mill. Thanks for letting me call back. I just have to counter something that Carl said earlier. There is an archaeological dig going on right now at the edge of the Red Sea. The sea has dissipated a bit from heat, I guess, and they have found horse bones and chariots.
Yes, they have.
Buried in the mud.
And there is a natural bridge underwater, and there's only one place that that chariots could have gone down into the water or that people could have walked.
That's right. So the Moses story is true. He did take the people across the Red Sea, and Pharaoh's chariot
I'm sorry, you were saying Pharaoh's chariots?
Yes.
You got cut off at that point. Go say that again, please.
Well, when they were chasing Moses across the, well, through the Red Sea, the sea came back together and they drowned. So the chariots and their horse bones are buried in the mud where the sea had subsided. So Moses taking the people through the Red Sea is a true story. That's just what I was getting at.
Thank you.
Carl said it was baloney. So.
Yeah, well.
There is an archaeological dig going on right now that's proven that it did happen. Also, I wanted to mention Kira Makita was on Sunday with a lady that has wrote a book called Women Alone. It was amazing hour she had on. This woman wrote a book about the Mormon women traveling by themselves because their men had to go fight the war. And these women were so strong in their faith, but they made it by themselves without their men with them for a long period of time.
How many women today could do that?
No. Heavens, no. But I definitely want to get this book and read it. It sounds amazing. So called Women Alone, but I thought I wrote down the name of the lady that wrote the book, but I looked through my notes so I couldn't find it. So,
thank you, Bonnie.
Okay.
I appreciate that information.
All right. Bye, Neil.
Bye-bye. We're going to pause briefly for another commercial, and then we'll be back with Frank and hopefully you as well. The telephone number, 801-254-5855.
You hear a lot these days about credit, how to get it, how to repair it. And if you're wondering about your credit, stop right now. What you really want to do is put your life back together, create a new life that'll provide for your family right now and in the future. What you should be asking is, what's next? And that's why we call our company, What's Next. Get ready to write down a phone number. At What's Next, we want to create a corporation just for you. Then build $25,000 corporate credit so you can buy real estate, vehicles, and a new life for you and your family. Yes, we'll repair your credit, but that's just the beginning. A What's Next membership is just $199 and $99 a month, and we guarantee the $25,000 corporate credit or your money back. Call us and ask, what's next? We have specialists waiting for your call. Here's the number, 866-674-7154, 866-674-7154, 866-674-7154.
Another horrific stock market crash is coming, and this bust is going to be worse than anything we've ever seen. Who says? Jeremy Grantham, co-founder and chief investment strategist of GMO, a Boston-based firm with $117 billion in assets under management. He says Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen is ignorant. He adds, we've never had this before. It's going to be the most painful ever for investors. Mark Spitznagel, a hugely successful hedge fund manager, also warns of a severe, imminent stock market crash. In fact, he says we must absolutely expect it. And billionaire investor Warren Buffett is preparing for a crash as well. The Buffett indicator says that a sell alert status is imminent and collapse may happen at any moment. Don't wait. Get out of paper now. Call 801-706-2256 and we'll help you convert your paper assets to collapse-resistant precious metal. That's 801-706-2256. Call 801-706-2256 now.
Call now. Call 254-5855. AM 630 K-Talk, the voice of Utah. Drive Time Live with Mills Crenshaw.
Welcome back. Don't forget, if you have finally come to the conclusion that you've got to do something to protect your assets. After the show, in an hour and 15 minutes, you can call me. I'll answer any questions you've got. I don't do sales pitches, but I will be happy to answer any questions you've got about converting from paper assets to precious metal. The number to call then is 801-706-2256. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second. But gentlemen, once again, for those who joined us late, tell us about the upcoming conference.
So it's the Fair Mormon Conference. It's being held this week on Thursday and Friday. That's August 7th and 8th. It begins, registration begins at 8 a.m., and the speakers begin at 9 a.m., and it ends each day at 5 p.m. You can buy tickets at the door. Tickets for the full conference are $65, and tickets for one of the days, if you want to do one or the other, is $40. If you also want to stream it from your, you know, your device or laptop or computer or whatever, you can go for $25 for both days. You can stream it live, and it will stay with you for like a week or two after. You can rewatch it. We have a number of speakers covering topics on the Book of Abraham, the Book of Mormon, church history, social issues being discussed today, like women's roles and same-sex marriage in society, and also some other things.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I don't think we've mentioned yet is there's going to be, on Friday afternoon, there's going to be a panel discussion, actually, about coming from people who have had members of their family who have left the church. And, you know, how to handle that and how to deal with, you know, some of the repercussions that come. And you know, that's a hard thing for a lot of families to have to deal with when a wife or a husband or children leave the church. And so we're going to have, you know, several people who have had experience with that and how, and they're just going to talk about how to deal with that. And so, you know, that's something that a lot of people are facing these days. And that's one thing that we really want to make sure people are aware of is going to be available.
I'm glad to hear that's part of it. Let me just say that the wisest course I have seen is simply to show a great deal of love for those people and do everything you can to let them know you still care about them.
Absolutely. Definitely.
And the worst thing you can do is ostracize them because they've left their church.
Yeah, and I think
many come back if you show that kind of love.
Yeah, I think you're going to hear a lot of the same kind of advice there in the panel. But
Frank, thank you for your call. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a, I don't know if it's even an answerable question, but I've always thought and wondered about this. LDS faith believes that there's a Heavenly Mother, correct?
That's right.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, let me just interject for a second. That's a great question. And if you heard Julie Rowe, my guest, she described her. She saw her.
I didn't hear her. Julie, I don't put much faith in what Julie Rowe has to say. Aside from that, are there more than one Heavenly Mother would be my next question.
Depends on who you ask.
I don't think we know.
I've heard different responses or answers to that. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Brigham Young and some of the earlier leaders of the church were of that belief or that opinion. But for my own money, I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. I personally am not opposed to the idea of there being multiple Heavenly Mothers. Nothing about that strikes me as particularly objectionable. It's one of those things that I'm sort of waiting to get there to find out, you know, what the actual situation is.
Don't rush it.
So here's where it comes, why I proposed the first two questions. Immaculate Conception and the God overshadowing the human and creating the demigod or part God or to be God in terms of Christ, would he not be breaking one of his own laws?
No. Let me jump in, and you gentlemen correct me if you've read other things. My understanding is that Gabriel, the angel, was priesthood authority and that it involved a marriage. And remember, she was not married that is, Mary was not married yet. She was espoused, but she was not yet married. And once there is a separation, if the husband leaves or is dead, then it's permissible for the wife to remarry, correct? So there would be no adultery, there would be no violation of their own rules or of the laws of marriage. And as such, that it was sanctified and that the angel Gabriel, this is one theory that I've heard, that the angel Gabriel was the presiding authority at a marriage, if you will.
But God now has married more than one woman, correct?
Not in this life.
You know,
so that may marry his wife through Gabriel as the mediator or the orator of the marriage, and now Mary commits adultery because she goes on to marry Joseph and has other children with him.
No. No, wait. You misunderstand, because once God or the Holy Spirit or whomsoever you believe is involved in this transaction, once there was a separation, it was like being dead, and she would be permitted then to remarry.
God is not dead, so they're not really divorced. There isn't a remarriage possible.
If I could actually just interject real quick, that's one theory that's out there. My own personal opinion is that I don't really think there was any sexual intercourse involved in impregnating Mary. I think if we can figure out ways to produce children without sex through things like in vitro fertilization and artificial insemination, I'm certain that God could figure it out 2,000 years before us.
Oh yeah,
so,
good point.
So I don't have any problem believing that there was just no sex involved at all.
Well, whether there's sex or not, the genetics or whatever we want to call it was performed, correct?
Well, if you're asking if I think Jesus had...
To a sperm bank and donated some sperm or, you know...
Wait a second. How about the people in this life who, for one reason or another, can't have children, and they take an egg from the mother, and they have to have a sperm donor because the father is infertile? Is that adultery?
Some people might say it is. And I think your people that might stand on the religious right, while they don't have the same issue with immaculate conception that I'm proposing, would probably think it would be. Because they don't believe that we can play deity and create life through means that were just described. That's just my thinking.
Well,
the only
rebuttal I could give you to that is, I'm not sure that Heavenly Father is feels that he is bound by men's laws.
No, that's a law that God gave to man, which he says, you know, follow my commandments, you'll be like me. So, in the round of things, if we take it eternally, as we LDS often profess, and we are to become a God, then we also will have an intelligence that will come forth and say that they will be the savior of our creation. And then we have to replicate that process. Now, does that mean that we learn beyond what our current understanding is and we'll understand this in vitro fertilization or, you know, the artificial insemination? What about generations before us that didn't have any knowledge of what we have now? Are they taught that in the heavens?
Let me just say one thing real quick. Let me just jump in here. A lot of these topics that we often like to speculate and theorize about, like the Immaculate Conception or, you know, spirit birth or things like that, in my mind, there's too much cloudiness and murkiness and understanding there. And I'm very hesitant to latch onto just one theory or explanation. Partly, I believe, because it may have just been a process that we cannot, you know, with our finite understanding, fully comprehend or understand. The scriptures themselves simply say that Mary conceived by the power of God and that Jesus was in this way the Son of God. What exactly that entails, I don't know, and I don't pretend to know. And I think any theories or explanations should be done cautiously just because we don't know. And like I said, that might be something that we find out in our celestial high school class, right,
and,
is how this works.
And it is fun to speculate, but it's just that. It's
yeah,
speculation.
Exactly.
The last thing I want to throw out there is it sounds a lot like Greek mythology.
when you take Zeus, who comes down and has a relationship with a human on Earth, and then you have Hercules.
Frank, let me cut you short, because I've heard this theory before, and remember that the gospel concepts came long before Greek mythology. And if there is any commingling of the ideas, it would be that Greek mythology grew out of a misunderstanding of the truths of the gospel. Because they were, the truth was given
Greek
to... No. Adam was the man who was given the gospel. And from the very beginning, he knew about the coming of Jesus Christ and all of the rest of that. And as it was passed down through time and corrupted through conversations and disbelief, out of it grew Greek mythology, not the other way around.
And okay. If I could just add to that, just because there's two ideas that sound similar or sound related, that doesn't mean that they're both not true or they both are true. One can still be true and the other one be completely false. Just because there's parallels doesn't invalidate the truth of one or the other.
You are correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank Appreciate you. It. Let's go to line five. Infamous welcome, sir.
My goodness, you couldn't have had a better segue to what I'm going to have, because I'm going to put our optics way back, if I might, if you'll indulge me for a second. But let me just preface...
Unfortunately, we've only got about 2.5 minutes.
Can I hold over?
Yeah, but we're going to be going on to other topics.
Well, I'll just wait till another time, because I'm going to go clear back to Yatra Hasis.
We'll start.
And where the beginning of the Jewish calendar was. And what is in the reliefs of the Sumerian and temples of Nineveh. But anyway, I thought some detail on the Book of Mormon, but I guess I'll wait for another time.
You know, I'm an ancient Near Eastern studies major at BYU, so I've studied a number of those things that I think you just mentioned, and I don't think 2.5 minutes would do justice to describing all of those.
Well, the
Atahasis creation myth, for example, itself has had long discussion on it. But it's fun to talk about those things. I wish we just had more time.
Well, I just think that if anybody wants to contrast and look at when the Jewish calendar actually began, and then compare the level of knowledge in Sumer with that possessed in Europe during the Middle Ages, and then look on those temples, it will enlighten you. But I'd like to do that sometime, because I've got some good detail here. It goes back 28,000 years.
We're going to invite these gentlemen back.
All right.
And
keep your faith, keep your head down, your powder dry. They might be shooting at you.
Thank you.
Thanks
you
very much. There really isn't time to take another call yet. Those of you who are on the line, hold on. I'll give you your say on the other side. But, gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming and giving us 2 hours. It's gone by in a hurry.
Yeah, it certainly,
certainly has.
And one last, in 1 minute, one last statement about the upcoming conference.
Come to the fair conference. It's Thursday and Friday, pretty much all day. You can buy tickets for both days or one day. That's $65 for both days, $40 for one day or the other. Or you can get streaming online for $25. We hope you will tune in one way or another.
And if you can make it in person, it's at the Utah Valley Convention Center in Provo. Not to be confused with any of the places in Orem. Sometimes that throws people up. But it's in Provo on Center Street, August 7th and 8th.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next hour, we're going to be talking about miracles that are happening in the war in Gaza. And that today's news, brand new. And we'll also be talking about Ebola and whether or not there may be a conspiracy involved with this Ebola outbreak. Gentlemen, safe journey, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show on KTOK. Telephone number 801-254-5855. We'll be back right after top of the hour news.
At AdvanceAutoParts.com, you can find the part you need and get it delivered straight to your home from the comfort of home. Plus, when you order $75 or more from AdvanceAutoParts.com, your shipping is free. Imagine ordering from the comfort of your pajamas, a smoking jacket, a go commando, whatever. Spend $75 and the shipping's free. And so are you, man. AdvanceAutoParts.com. Service is our best part.
Advance Auto Parts.
See site for details.
Discover card.
So that's it. I lost my job. My days of coaching football are over.
Well, that's tough, but you will bounce back. You've got our new IT card, so we'll lower your interest rate, lower your monthly payment, or find another way to help.
You'd do that for me?
Of course. You are a champion. Now, who are you?
A champion.
No, come on. Who are you?
A champion.
Who are you?
I'm a champion!
No, seriously, I need your name.
Oh, it's Steve.
At Discover, we treat you like you treat you. Job loss support. Get the new IT card at discover.com.
No one wants to face a dental emergency, but when it happens, and all of us are going to face it sometime in our life, you don't want to wait for the next available appointment. You want help now. Night or day, weekends or holidays, there's one gifted dentist you can count on to relieve your suffering and restore your smile in an emergency. Well, let me recommend Dr. Sam Ritchie in Riverton at the Lighthouse Dental, located at the southwest corner of Bangor and 134 South. From the moment you walk in, you're going to feel at home. The rates are reasonable, and there are several types of financing available, no matter what your family's dental needs might be. Tell the receptionist you're a K-Talk listener, and you'll get an initial consultation and examination, including x-rays, absolutely free. Call 801-253-GRIN. That's easy to remember. 253-4746. That's 253-GRIN. Call now, 253-GRIN, to schedule your free consultation, 801-253-GRIN, and remember to tell them Mills referred you, or you can visit them at their website, lighthousesmiles.com.
You're listening to Utah's first number one talk station, K-Talk, AM 630, KTKK, Sandy, Salt Lake City. The whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. The highest-ranking U.S. Army officer to be killed in the Iraq or Afghanistan wars has been identified as Major General Harold Green. NBC's Steve Handelsman says the attack happened today during a visit to a military academy near Kabul.
Witnesses say a lone Afghan soldier in uniform opened fire with his assault rifle. The U.S. general died, a German general, and more than a dozen U.S. and coalition troops were wounded, and the gunman was killed.
A major investment in Africa to the tune of $33 billion has been announced at a summit being held in Washington. President Obama says the public and private commitments are an investment in Africa's growth.
We want to build genuine partnerships that create jobs and opportunity for all our peoples and that unleash the next era of African growth. That's the kind of partnership America offers.
A second American aid worker with Ebola is now being treated at an Atlanta hospital. Nancy Reitbol arrived back on U.S. soil today. This is NBC News Radio. The U.S. Supreme Court will have to decide whether to take up a same-sex marriage case when the justices return in October. Utah officials have filed an appeal with the high court asking it to uphold the state's gay marriage ban. A Gallup HealthWays survey finds that states that fully embrace the president's health care law are experiencing a significant drop in the number of uninsured people.
Today's survey found an overall drop of 4 percentage points in the share of uninsured residents for states accepting the law's core provisions. The drop was much smaller, 2.2 percentage points, in states that held back politically. Uninsured residents of those states still had access to new federal insurance markets. Greg Tanum, NBC News Radio, Washington.
The San Antonio Spurs named Becky Hammon an assistant coach. The 37-year-old who plays for the WNBA's San Antonio Stars retires after her 16th season. She will become the first female paid by an NBA team to be an assistant. I'm Melissa Rayberger, NBC News Radio.
They say every healthy relationship should have a balance of predictability and spontaneity. In fact, it is that assurance of security that makes the spontaneous possible. Your relationship with your car should be a little like that too. With our new industry-leading unlimited mileage warranty, your certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz instills a sense of confidence. You drive away knowing that you can keep driving for up to 3 years and never have to worry about the miles. Add to that our new complimentary prepaid maintenance on select models, and your certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz becomes the ultimate carefree escape vehicle. Only during the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Sales event, going on now through September 2nd, can you also take advantage of a 2-month payment credit on many models, plus 3 months of Sirius XM satellite radio. So hurry in today. It might just be the most predictable spur-of-the-moment decision you've ever made.
See your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for complete details and limitations on certified pre-owned warranties.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-319-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-319-MYTV.
At just $24.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
Call 877-319-MYTV. That's 877-319-MYTV.
Your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy, it's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now. 800-520-1558. That's 800-520-1558. Don't wait. Call 800-520-1558.
Do you need an attorney? Are you worried that you'll need to take time away from work or your business to see your attorney? Taking time from your day usually means lost productivity and money. You do not have to miss work to see your lawyer. The After Hours Practice Group at the law offices of Cragen and Love works with clients who prefer to meet during early mornings, evening hours, or on Saturdays. Free consultations are available. Call 801-924-3701 to receive more information or to schedule an appointment. You can also visit us on the web at www.afterhoursattorneys.com. Don't miss work to see your lawyer. Attorney Brett Cragen is a member of the iTex trading community. Your iTex dollars are welcome.
Are you planning a vacation and trying to make your whole family happy?
I want a hotel with convenient locations and continental breakfast.
It better have internet.
Don't forget, we're on a budget.
America's Best Value Inn has you covered with all this and more at most of our 1,000 hotels in North America. Plus, join the Value Club for instant room discounts, upgrades, and late checkout.
Yes, I can sleep in.
Visit americasbestvalueinn.com and make even your grumpiest teenager happy.
Hiya, Fred.
Hello, Eddie.
So, where are you heading off to?
Just gonna take a ride down to Parts Plus. Wanna come with?
All the way to Parts Plus.
Oh, quit your fussing and get in.
I just don't see why you want to drive all the way to Parts Plus when it's a big discount store.
See, there you go. You don't know what you're talking about. Parts Plus has stuff that box store never thought about carrying. And the people there know cars.
Okay, all right.
Parts Plus. You'll see.
For the location nearest you, go to PartsPlus.com.
Before Rush, there was Mills. Before Limbaugh, there was Crenshaw. Hard-hitting political talk and human interest discussions since 1965. Now, Drive Time Live with the Dean of Talk Radio, Mills Crenshaw.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past five. You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Show, and I want to thank Ted Sumner, my good friend, for that introduction. And for your information, he has come through the surgery that he underwent yesterday very well. And the latest input I got from him was that he refused the morphine that they were going to give him for pain today, and he thinks he may actually be released from the hospital today. Let's go quickly back to the phones. Justin, welcome, sir.
Hi. I just hung on so that you wouldn't call my name and not be there. I had a question for your guests, but they're gone now, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for having them on. It was really interesting, and I'm surprised. I wasn't sure if I was going to like them, but it was actually really interesting, so thanks for having them on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your listening.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. When I was growing up, there were a couple of men on radio who were my heroes. One of them was Paul Harvey, And before Paul Harvey, Arthur Godfrey. Some of you are young enough that you won't even know who I'm talking about as far as Arthur Godfrey is concerned. But they piqued my interest, and I really credit them with my being involved in radio. After I began as a broadcaster, there was one man who was doing talk radio. I heard him in West Coast radio. Name is Dennis Prager, brilliant man, extremely well-educated, an expert in the Middle East. He has prepared probably the most important video about Israel ever made. It's on the internet, and it is taking the internet by storm. Now, I can't show you the pictures, but the audio speaks for itself. And I'm going to play it for you because it is the clearest, simplest declaration of what the heck is going on over in the Middle East right now. And I want you to listen very, very carefully because he sums it up clearly. The Middle East problem in a nutshell.
Studies at the Middle East Institute at Columbia University's School of International Affairs. I took many courses on the question of the Middle East conflict. Semester after semester, we studied the Middle East conflict as if it was the most complex conflict in the world, when in fact, it is probably the easiest conflict in the world to explain. It may be the hardest to solve, but it is the easiest to explain. In a nutshell, it's this. One side wants the other side dead. Israel wants to exist as a Jewish state and to live in peace. Israel also recognizes the right of Palestinians to have their own state and to live in peace. The problem, however, is that most Palestinians and many other Muslims and Arabs do not recognize the right of the Jewish state of Israel to exist. This has been true since 1947, when the United Nations voted to divide the land called Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jews accepted the United Nations partition, but no Arab or any other Muslim country accepted it. When British rule ended on May 15, 1948, the armies of all the neighboring Arab states, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Transjordan, and Egypt, attacked the one-day-old state of Israel in order to destroy it. But to the world's surprise, the little Jewish state survived. Then it happened again. In 1967, the dictator of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, announced his plan, in his words, to destroy Israel. He placed Egyptian troops on Israel's border, and armies of surrounding Arab countries were also mobilized to attack. However, Israel preemptively attacked Egypt and Syria. Israel did not attack Jordan and begged Jordan's king not to join the war. But he did. And only because of that did Israel take control of Jordanian land, specifically the West Bank of the Jordan River. Shortly after the war, the Arab states went to Khartoum, Sudan, and announced their famous three no's. No recognition, no peace, and no negotiations. What was Israel supposed to do? Well, one thing Israel did a little more than a decade later in 1978 was to give the entire Sinai Peninsula, an area of land bigger than Israel itself and with oil, back to Egypt, because Egypt, under new leadership, signed a peace agreement with Israel. So Israel gave land for the promise of peace with Egypt, and it has always been willing to do the same thing with the Palestinians. All the Palestinians have ever had to do is recognize Israel as a Jewish state and promise to live in peace with it. But when Israel has proposed trading land for peace, as it did in 2000, when it agreed to give the Palestinians a sovereign state in more than 95% of the West Bank and all of Gaza, the Palestinian leadership rejected the offer and instead responded by sending waves of suicide terrorists into Israel. Meanwhile, Palestinian radio, television, and school curricula remain filled with glorification of terrorists, demonization of Jews, and the daily repeated message that Israel should cease to exist. So it's not hard to explain the Middle East dispute. One side wants the other dead. The motto of Hamas, the Palestinian rulers of Gaza, is, "We love death as much as the Jews love life." There are 22 Arab states in the world, stretching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean. There is one Jewish state in the world, and it is about the size of New Jersey. In fact, tiny El Salvador is larger than Israel. Finally, think about these two questions. If tomorrow Israel laid down its arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? And if the Arab countries around Israel laid down their arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? In the first case, there would be an immediate destruction of the state of Israel and mass murder of its Jewish population. In the second case, there would be peace the next day. As I said at the outset, it is a simple problem to describe. One side wants the other dead. And if it didn't, there would be peace. Please remember this. There has never been a state in the geographic area known as Palestine that was not Jewish. Israel is the third Jewish state to exist in that area. There was never an Arab state, never a Palestinian state, never a Muslim or any other state. That's the issue. Why can't the one Jewish state the size of El Salvador be allowed to exist? That is the Middle East problem. I'm Dennis Prager.
Yeah. Clear, concise, and based on provable history. And if you want to see that, you can find it on The Blaze, www.theblaze.com. And there are graphics that go along with that discussion, but I felt that it was clear enough for anyone to understand. As I say, Dennis Prager is well-read and brilliant. There are now some very insightful stories coming out of that conflict, which I'll share with you in a few minutes, about miracles that are happening during this conflict. Hi, caller, your first name, please.
Yeah, this is Martin.
Yes, Martin.
Hey, I wonder why Dennis Prager didn't mention the embargo and dropping phosphorus weapons on the Palestinians. I wonder why he left that out.
Those are acts involved in the conflict, not the cause of the conflict. He was talking about the conflict itself, not the prosecution of the conflict.
Well, why didn't he mention then the United States, who paid Fatah to send missiles into Israel? Why didn't he mention that?
I'm not sure that's a fact.
Well, it is. Yeah, and you know, it's amazing how little people know about this whole situation. And you know, it's that piece was a good propaganda piece, I have to say, but it really only tells part of the story. The thing is that what would be nice is that if Israel would free the Palestinian people, they'd really be free, and then if they continued the behavior, then they'd be justified in fighting back. But you still don't just in this, you know, you still be careful not to kill people that are not fighting you.
I'm glad you said that, because one of the other things that I'm going to play for you during this hour is an eyewitness account from an Indian. Now, I'm talking about the continent of India, not American natives. An Indian television crew who witnessed a group from Hamas setting up a rocket launch from a highly populated area, and it's again there for everyone to see. They recorded it, they filmed it, and again it's available on the Blaze. They show the entire process of setting it up right in the middle of a highly populated area and firing. They documented the firing at Israel from Gaza, and it's there for everybody to see. It's not a matter of speculation or discussion or somebody's attempt at propaganda. You can see it for yourself because they take the pains to show these men working, why it wasn't visible to the Israeli Air Force. And they pulled the cameras back so that you could see that it was in a highly concentrated commercial and populous location. They were using civilians as shields. And you can see it for yourself.
All right, that may be the case. And the thing is that who paid for it? Who is Hamas? Who were they working for? We know darn well that Arafat was working for the United States. The United States gave him over $1 billion.
No, we don't know that. Out. We don't know
yes,
that.
You know that.
No,
but
we
you
don't.
You know that.
No, we don't.
Yes,
what we know that monies were given. But money was given to the Afghans to fight Russia, and then they turned against us. The people who took
but
our
now,
money.
I don't understand about Afghanistan. Why you're bringing up Afghanistan?
Well, I'm giving you an example of how our aid ends up quite often being turned against us.
Well, did we not invade Afghanistan?
No, we didn't invade Afghanistan.
Oh, we didn't? Well, my history's a little messed up, so I wonder. I thought we had troops over in Afghanistan for some reason.
You're talking about after. I'm talking about the fact that we did not initiate the conflict over there. Obviously, you favor other governments other than our own. Randy, welcome.
Yeah, Mills, I saw something, I don't know if it was the same one you saw, about them firing these charges out of a group of kids standing in a populated, like a homes area. But the narrative I saw on it said that was something that was transcribed over to being taking place in Gaza when, in fact, it had taken place in Syria.
No, the one I saw is a totally independent group from an Indian television station. They identify themselves, and you see the narrator, you see through the window where they're photographing it, and you see the troops working under a tent.
You say that was on the Blaze?
The Blaze, that's correct.
Yeah,
you can see it for yourself.
I find it interesting that a lot of stuff that comes on to KTOK and the Blaze and WorldNet Daily is all used in common, and it seems to portray one side of the issue. I saw another clip that showed the ambassador, the Jewish ambassador who used to be an American, and there was an interview, and he was asked about them spying on us and about John Kerry being spied on, and all of a sudden his headphones went bad and he couldn't hear anymore, and he didn't respond to the question because he couldn't hear him anymore once he got asked that question. So I look for alternate places to see news from both sides so that I can kind of chart a course somewhere in the middle, because you know one side or another is going to try and pull the news towards their side to the max. And that's the thing that I have to complain about.
Caller, your first name?
I'm still here.
Look, you certainly are entitled to your opinion, and we just happened to see things quite differently, but I appreciate your giving your viewpoint. Thank you.
You only see things different.
What's that?
I said you only see things different when you, you know, two people will see things different because they have different sources of getting information. So,
no, I try and look at all sources of information. But, for example, I see people like Geraldo Rivera who are condemning the Jewish warriors for fighting back and ignoring the fact that Hamas has a policy of using civilians as a shield.
What?
And they even, they've even found a field manual where they talk about this, their policy and why they do it, and it's for propaganda purposes. And I don't like to present propaganda. I appreciate your thought.
I think that there's other things that crop up, like you're familiar with the territory of the God, what Gaza has. Where have you seen in the Bible where it shows the ancient kingdom, how it was divided up amongst the 10 tribes?
Yeah, this is not that day, and it is not that time.
Well, this is the justification they're using for this day, Mills. That it was.
I don't care what justification they're using. I'm going to give a couple of stories that will show.
I can't
hold a conversation when it's one-sided. Sorry, but the point is. Well, I'll let you judge for yourself when I share these stories with you, and that'll be just a couple of minutes. Phil, welcome, sir.
Yeah, you were a little flippant with Martin about his famed misunderstanding of us having invaded Afghanistan. Martin does not hate our country, and we did, in fact, invade Afghanistan.
Okay, I'm not talking about this latest series of conflict. I'm talking about the fact that we gave weapons to the Afghanis to let them throw out the Russians. And then they turned their weapons on us.
Of course, when we invaded their country. There's a reason why they would do that. I don't think that we should have been handing out weapons like popsicles anyway. To anybody. I don't care what the reasoning is, because those weapons could always come back next Thursday afternoon and be pointed right up your nose. You have no control over them once they've left your hand.
You're absolutely right. We don't. And it is foolish for us to act as the policemen of the world.
So just because we gave Afghanis weapons doesn't mean we can go booting on over into their country and say, you know what, we don't like some of the things you do here and we're going to fix it. That we were so abysmally wrong there for whatever we had done to help the Mujahideen back in the 90s or the 80s, that there's no atonement for that. We were absolutely wrong. That we get shot with our own weapons is kind of our own stupid fault.
Okay, that's certainly a point of view. By the way, were we invited in by the then authoritative government of Afghanistan, or were we not?
When?
When we first sent troops over. I believe you'll find that we were invited there. Thank you for your call. Ronald, welcome, sir.
A couple things, Mills. You said that the...
Wait, before you go any further... I don't care what name you want to use. You can use any name you want to, but I want you to pick one name and stick to it.
Well, then you tell me I can't call in.
Only
you call me by that name.
Only if you're being abusive. I could cut you off now. I'm not going to unless you get abusive. But
yes,
but right. you, I don't care. But just pick a name and stick with it, please.
Okay. You, just 2 points. You said that the Hamas uses human shields.
That
as a
is
propaganda
a fact.
Tool. Okay.
That is a fact.
Isn't the Holocaust the same thing? They're using human shields. They're using a tragedy as a propaganda piece.
No.
To legitimize
the Holocaust
any
is
criticism. No, it really is.
The Holocaust is a real event.
It is, but they use it as a propaganda piece to make it impossible to criticize.
No, there's
Jews.
A difference between shooting at people from behind women and children and using something as a propaganda tool.
Well, it's a propaganda tool. I'm not saying the Holocaust didn't occur, because I believe it did, but if you use it as a propaganda tool to deflect any criticism, they just card out the anti-Semitic label.
That's not what we're talking about when we talk about human shields.
I disagree. I think it's similar.
It's a polemic tool, and I will grant you that. It is a polemic tool, but it is not using human beings as a physical shield to prevent a person from firing back when you're firing at them. And it's actually, with all due respect, it's a childish comparison.
Okay, and I think it's a little bit unfortunate to use an event like the Holocaust constantly in their politics, because there's some legitimate questions we have. Now, the second point I wanted to make, you and I both talked about the downing of this Malaysian airliner in Ukraine as being a little bit suspicious, correct?
Yes, I agree.
20 minutes after it went down, Israel started their offensive in the Gaza Strip. So do you think there was a coordination there?
I don't think so, but could
it
be?
Why would it be within 20 minutes of it going down? And that's on record.
Okay, I don't know. Neither do you. You're speculating that it was coordinated.
Well, but this is what happens often: is that they use a different way.
They being
most of the neocons are dual citizens with the United States and Israel.
The
foreign policy. This is true, and you can say, "Oh boy," but you always avoid this. But this is part of the criticism of Israel that we really need to investigate.
In the first place, the term neocon doesn't translate. That means
maybe not to you. I think most of the audience knows what a neocon is.
Really, tell me what a neocon is.
It's a neoconservative. It's big government.
What does the word? What does the word neo mean?
It means new.
That's correct. And a conservative is not somebody who believes in big centralized government.
I think Pat Buchanan coined the term neoconservative because they believed in a big government solution to conservative issues.
But,
big military.
But that is a non sequitur.
Well, to you, but I think most of the world knows what. But I don't want to get into semantics. I want you to address this thing with the Malaysian airliner. 20 minutes after it goes down, Israel launches its assault into Gaza.
I don't know. I don't know that there's any coordination.
Well, you don't know a lot of things, but this is the kind of thing that goes on and on and on with Israel.
And of course, to you,
and you discard it every time.
To you, the Jews are always the bad guys.
I don't want people doing things that undermine the United States, like 9/11, like us going into Iraq and spending trillions of dollars. Hundreds of thousands.
And you assume that we were responsible for that in spite of...
I don't know who is responsible, but you discard any evidence except for the 9/11 report, which I think most people anymore totally, you know, discredit. My point is, this Malaysian airliner goes down. It's suspicious. 20 minutes after it goes down, Israel launches its assault into Gaza. They also use the Holocaust as a propaganda tool to deflect criticism. Those are my two points.
Okay, you've stated them. Thank you.
Thanks.
801-254-5855. Robert, welcome.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. These people, I don't know, I just hope one day you let me take over the mic for you and they all call, because to me they're all satanic. They come up with the craziest lies they could think of and then scream and go ballistic. I mean, everybody knows that Israel's God's chosen people, and that's their main thing. I mean, Satan hates them more than anything. So
I am so glad you said that. And let me interject a story into this conversation. I won't take away from your time,
but it
fits what we're talking about here. There are several stories now that are crossing the wires. The first one is that two miracles of nature some of the people over there say that protected them during the fighting. Israelis have reported experiencing two miracles of nature which protected them during the fight with Hamas in Gaza. Colonel Ofer Winter, an Israeli Defense Force brigade commander, who is a religious Jew, attributed the way his soldiers were protected in Gaza to a divine miracle. In an interview with the Israeli newspaper Mishpacha, Winter described the unusual occurrence that might have come straight out of the Bible. The Times of Israel gave this report. He said, a pre-dawn raid was intended to make use of the dark as concealment. Unfortunately, it was delayed. That forced the soldiers to move toward their objective as the sun was about to rise. And the soldiers were in danger of being revealed in the light. And then Winter said a heavy fog suddenly descended to cover their movement until the objective was achieved. Quote, suddenly a cloud protected us, he said, making reference to the clouds that the Bible says protected the Israelites as they wandered in the desert. Clouds of glory, close quote. Only when the soldiers were securely in position at their objective did the fog dissipate, he said. It was really a fulfillment of the verse, quote, for the Lord your God is one who goes with you into victory, referring to Deuteronomy. And this experience was also reminiscent of the pillar that the cloud that protected the Israelites as they escaped from Egypt and crossed the Red Sea, that's contained in the book of Exodus. And the second miracle was reported by a group of religious Jews who, in early July, right before the fighting broke out, traveled to southern Israel to harvest wheat in advance of the biblical Sabbath year. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, there is a Jewish law that talks about the Sabbath year, which means you don't plant any crops or harvest anything on the seventh year. You let the land rest. A great miracle occurred thanks to the fact that they had to harvest more wheat than usual to comply with this biblical mandate not to harvest in the seventh year. This year, this is a quote now, this year we are before the Sabbath year. We need to harvest wheat for 2 years. We plowed the land up and down looking for wheat that was sown late with the rains that fell late this year. And on Kibbutz Sufa, on the Gaza border, we found an entire field that was sown in mid-January, which is very unusual. We harvested the wheat, didn't give it another thought. Only weeks later, when the fighting between Israel and Hamas was at its peak, did Samat and his friends suddenly realize the significance of their action. On July 17th, 13 Hamas militants infiltrated from Gaza via a tunnel into Israel at the exact spot near Kibbutz Sufa where the men had been farming. The terrorists were shocked to discover that their natural camouflage, the giant wheat field that they were counting on to cover their entrance, had disappeared. Now the empty field allowed the Israeli Defense Force surveillance to spot them as they emerged from their holes to repel their attack by dropping bombs on them from above. Quote, many lives were saved by the grace of heaven, the Israeli radio station Holhai commentated. And of the events that he experienced, Brigade Commander Winter concluded, when a person is in a life-threatening situation, he connects with his deepest internal truths. When that happens, even the biggest atheist meets God. And soldiers experience so many miracles, the general said, it's hard not to believe in God. End of that story. But there's more. And I, your thoughts, you mentioned that these are the chosen people. That's one of the things that anti-Israelis really jump on. They hate that concept. But it appears to me that God is fighting on their side in this battle. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and my favorite part, without knowing all the history like that, is, you know, I keep an eye on it as much as I can, but there's not everything's out there. But Hamas and Hezbollah and all of them have been trying to launch rockets into Israel for years, you know, decades or something. And so they've launched hundreds of them at least, if not thousands. Well, supposedly the rockets aren't hitting nothing. And there's a couple of videos, like Glenn Beck's had a couple, where they go to light the rocket off and it blows up on the ground and blows everybody to shreds there. Or the thing takes off and it goes backwards and hits like a building two blocks back, not in Israel. You know, it's like they're getting their butt kicked by themselves. But, you know, there again, they sold their soul. They're serving Satan. So no matter what, they just keep doing what Satan wants, you know.
Well, that brings me to the second story, because it's a perfect follow-up to what you just said. We've got a break for the 40-minute break, and after that break, I'll share that story. But your point is well taken.
Okay. Yeah, I got more to say, but I'll call you tomorrow. I got to do something right now.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the call. And I'll take Mel's call right after the break, and as soon as I share that story, and then, of course, we'll hear his pro-Palestinian propaganda. You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show on KTalk. I once again invite you to go to the Blaze, simply because the story is there and you can see it, because I think that Dennis Prager's description of the Middle East problem is probably the most concise and understandable, and it presents some very important truths that get ignored by the mainstream media. There never was a Palestinian state, and there have been three Jewish states in that area, and all of this is ignored by the media. We'll be right back. You're listening to Drive Time Live, the Mills Crenshaw Show on KTalk.
Don't fall asleep in the snow. Come up, up, up from below. Wipe the sleep from your eyes. Oh, my, my. Shake the dust off your hands and come run free on this land if you want to survive.
Becca worked from home and her friends envied her. No commute, they'd say. And while no commute was great, Becca knew the flip side. No climbing in the car to get away from work. Work was always with her. Becca's big temptation was evenings. Office time without the business phone ringing. And those evening labors often cost her time with her family. To just enjoy being with them. This is Howard Butt Jr. of Lady Lodge. In God's infinite wisdom, He provides the antidote to overwork. It's called the Sabbath, the balance between rest and work. The Sabbath is our chance to resist our workaholic tendencies and to accept God's timing as part of the high calling of our daily work.
Learn more at thehighcalling.org.
Call now. Call 254-5855. AM 630 K-Talk. Real people. Real talk. Drive Time Live with Mills Crenshaw.
Welcome back. 801-254-5855. It's 542 in the Mountain West. Hand of God sent missile into sea. That's the headline. And there are more and more claims of divine intervention being reported in this ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas. And this story comes from an operator of Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. He says he personally witnessed, quote, the hand of God, close quote, diverting an incoming rocket out of harm's way. Israel Today translated a report from a Hebrew language news site, which noted that the Iron Dome battery failed three times to intercept an incoming rocket headed toward Tel Aviv last week. The commander recalled, quote, a missile was fired from Gaza. Iron Dome precisely calculated its trajectory. We know where these missiles are going to land down to a radius of 200 meters. This particular missile was going to hit either the Israeli towers, the Kiria, which is Israel's equivalent of the Pentagon, or a central Tel Aviv railway station, and hundreds of people could have died. He said, we fired the first interceptor. It missed. The second missed. This is very rare. I was in shock, and at this point, we had just 4 seconds until the missile landed. We'd already notified emergency services to converge on the target location and warned of a mass casualty incident. Quote, suddenly, Iron Dome, which calculates wind speeds, among other things, shows a major wind suddenly coming from the east, a strong wind that sent the missile into the sea. We were all stunned. I stood up, shouted, there is a God. I witnessed this miracle with my own eyes. It was not told or reported to me. I saw the hand of God send that missile into the sea, close quote. Elena's account is reminiscent of a recent newspaper headline that trumpeted the possibility of supernatural protection. Quote, oh, by the way, this quote is from a Palestinian. Their God changes the path of our rockets in midair, said a terrorist. It was a partial quote from Barbara Ordman, who lives in Male Adaman on the West Bank. Her exact quotation was, quote, as one of the terrorists from Gaza was reported to say when asked why they couldn't aim their rockets more effectively, he replied, quote, we do aim them, but their God changes their path in midair. And she opened this story by noting in October 1956, Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion was interviewed by CBS, and he said, in Israel, in order to be a realist, you must believe in miracles. Close quote. I find that fascinating. Okay, now, as promised, the Palestinian propaganda. Mel, you're on.
Hey, I'm sure you recall those incidents in World War II when the Jewish people in the Warsaw Ghetto rose up against the Nazi oppressors, also known as the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto.
I do recall that, yes.
You know, and
yes, I recall that.
And I'm sure, Mills, that you believe that it was totally justified for the Nazis to bomb the ghetto because those darn Jews actually resisted from within the ghetto. So therefore, when the Nazis bombed them with fighter bombers, that was just fine because these darn Jews were using human shields, right? So the Nazis were justified?
No, they weren't using human shields. It is not the same type of incident at all.
Well, if they're launching attacks on the Nazis from areas where civilians are located, then by your logic, the Nazis were not only justified, they should be praised.
Mel, don't use words like logic when you're presenting this kind of a diatribe, because it doesn't fit.
Now, you earlier said that you like to get all sides of the story,
yeah,
so that you have a
all
the information.
Your presentation is not presenting all sides. Your presentation is rewriting history. You're giving a false account of history in order to try and draw a parallel conclusion between what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto and what happened in Gaza. And the difference is Hamas, a warrior group, was deliberately, by their own documented position, were using weapons behind a human shield to create a propaganda device. The people in the ghetto during the Second World War were crammed into a space by the German hierarchy. They were being systematically killed, and when they resisted, it was because they had no other place from which they could fight. They were fighting on the only ground they had. Hamas looks for hospitals, schools, children to use as a shield.
Question two. You said that you try to look for information from all sides so that you could have a good objective analysis. Here's a question for you, Mills. Tell me one source that you're aware of that you've ever consulted that gives a pro-Palestinian view.
I quoted one.
I don't think you ever have.
Well, you ask a question and you're answering
Let's
it for me.
Let's have the answer there, homie.
I'm not your homie.
Go ahead and give the answer. You're Mr. Objective. You get the information from all the sides.
Okay, forgive me. I'm going to have to cut you off. I will answer your question, but you ask a question, then you keep talking. You don't give me an opportunity to answer. You ask me a fair question. The answer is, on Friday, I quoted the Deseret News source. And before I quoted the source, I gave all of the players and their comments. I gave their names, what they were doing. One of them was a Palestinian who is now living in New York, and a professor from BYU and a professor from the U of U, and they presented both sides of the issue. And when I quoted that source, I said, this seems to be a very fair and even-handed report. But you obviously weren't listening on that day. Scott, welcome, sir.
Hi. Just listening to the Jews and that, everybody cries and whines about five or six people getting killed when during the Second World War, when the Germans bombed London, and when we bombed Dresden and Tokyo, you know, how many millions of people did we burn alive? And nobody ever says anything about that. But you get into Israel and the Middle East and an airplane crashes and it's some big, huge deal. And I don't see where there's a correlation.
Nor do I. And you raise an excellent point. People forget this. During the Second World War, how many civilians were killed in the United States by German bombs?
None, or very few. There were some Japanese firebombs that came over.
Yeah, there may have been a couple of casualties, but minuscule. We wiped out German cities, men, women, and children.
Well, that was one of the cries that the Germans used when they counterattacked, was remember Dresden. We burned a city of like 3 million people right to the ground.
And then, of course, there was Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, we burned Tokyo before that.
Oh, yeah, the firebomb killed far more people than
300 million firebombs.
And more people were killed by the firebombing than were killed by the two nuclear weapons.
Yeah, but they could still fight back.
That's correct.
Fighting back against the nukes is a lost cause.
And the estimate was that by dropping those two nukes, we probably saved more than a million lives on both sides.
Right.
But you see, we weren't the Jews, so it wasn't to be condemned. We only condemn the actions of the Jews who are fighting for their lives.
Well, yeah. When the army was going into Germany, into the death camps, there were a lot of people that denied that it even happened.
I know.
Until they walked into the camps.
And
then everything changed.
And Eisenhower made the locals in that community go through those camps.
And clean up the bodies.
That's correct. And we have video of that. We have film of the locals hauling bodies.
And nobody complains about all the Jews that were killed then.
Oh, but you see, people say, oh, it couldn't have been 6 million.
Sure it could.
Well,
you fire up an incinerator and just start throwing people in there, and you can burn them.
If it were only 1,000,
it was too many.
Well, and it was a horrible thing. It was a planned genocide, and these Holocaust deniers who hide behind numbers and say, "Well, it wasn't really 6 million; it was only 5,395,000." You know, this kind of nonsense.
You go through and see how deep the piles of ash were.
Well, and you can see today, you can see the photographs taken by Germans of the stacks of bodies. I've been through the Holocaust Museum.
I don't think I could.
It's not pleasant, but it's something I think everybody needs to do to protect us from the mills of the world.
And the Wounded Warrior Project, how come we don't support it more? We've got thousands of GIs coming back with bits and pieces and traumatic shock. We were supporting one of the Rangers, and he was in a Humvee and ran over an IED, and it almost shattered his heart, not just brain loose.
I know, but you see, according to the naysayers, that's all our fault.
Yeah. It's like...
we're the criminals.
You stupid morons.
Appreciate your call.
You bet. Good work.
Diane, welcome.
Nils, I called to talk about the correlation I've noticed between the MEAC report and something else. Are you familiar with the MEAC report?
I am not. I apologize.
The MEAC report... they were telling the police officers to target or to be suspicious of people with Ron Paul bumper stickers. Does that ring a bell? Do you remember now?
I remember something like that, not specifically Ron Paul, but I do know that at one point the head of Homeland Security said anybody who is buying large amounts of food and MREs, buying war surplus things, that these people need to be turned in.
Well, if you look up MEAC, M-I-C-A report, you can get all the details, but when it was exposed, they apologized, and I think they just went underground. You know, they were already underground. They were exposed. They apologized, and then I think they regrouped. But anyway, they didn't just target Ron Paul, you know, people that supported Ron Paul. They were targeting Christians. They were targeting homeschoolers. They were targeting a whole bunch of people. And they were being labeled potential homegrown terrorists. And all I'm trying to equate...
I apologize. When I tried to put somebody on hold, I put you on hold as well. I caught you at the point where you said, all I'm trying to do, and then please complete your sentence from there.
Okay. I was just trying to say that they can label anyone a terrorist if they want to. Doesn't mean you're a terrorist, but if they decide that homeschoolers or people who are getting their food supply or people who support Ron Paul, if they decide that those are the people that are going to call terrorists, then that's what they're going to do, just like they call Hamas a terrorist organization. I Googled it, Mills. I went on and read what it said on Wikipedia, and not everybody, not all countries in this world say Hamas.
Okay, I'm totally out of time. I let you speak without interruption, but we are out of time. My apologies to those who are waiting. Stay tuned. Kyle 2K next.
What if I could make your next trip to the dentist enjoyable? In the bad old days, that would have been a ridiculous question, but now it's state-of-the-art. No pain, no anxiety. You can choose to lie back and enjoy a major motion picture, or if you prefer, you can snooze through the whole procedure and wake refreshed with no memory of the experience. Now, let me recommend Dr. Sam Ritchie in Riverton at the Lighthouse Dental, located at the southwest corner of Bangor and 134 South. From the moment you walk in, you're going to feel at home. The rates are reasonable, and there are several types of financing available, no matter what your family's dental needs might be. Tell the receptionist you're a K-Talk listener, and you'll get an initial consultation and examination, including x-rays, absolutely free. Call 801-253-GRIN. That's easy to remember. 253-4746. That's 253-GRIN. Call now, 253-GRIN, to schedule your free consultation, 801-253-GRIN, and remember to tell them Mills referred you, or you can visit them at their website, lighthousesmiles.com.
GEICO presents a thank you letter from your motorcycle.